Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. I hope you enjoy the show. Wait, I forgot the middle part. All right. Disclaimer. The views and opinions are not... Shit. Anyway. Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed on this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Ancast tapes live on some Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. Check my Twitter feed, ANNZach, for more. Enjoy the show. All right. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. It's been a little while since we've done one of these. This is a game show. If you're here for anime, if you came here to hear me talk about how last week I said I wasn't going to watch Tanya the Evil, but I'm watching it anyway, you'll have to wait until next week to hear about that. This week, it's all video games. We got a special panel here. I like to mix up the game show panels a little bit. But as always, Dave Riley from Fast Karate is here. Dave, thanks for coming on the show again.
No problem. I'm here to tell you that some video games can also be anime, and I prepared for just such a contingency tonight.
You know what? Some may say that's why we do this podcast. joining him for the first time, and I've been meaning to have her on the show for a while, but just never quite got around to asking, it's Graziella Matti, Dave's wife and partner on Fast Karate for the Gentlemen. You see him on their streams all the dang time. Graziella, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Fantastic. I'm excited. And joining the show for the first time since we hired him last year, This Week in Games author Dustin Bailey is here. Dustin, thank you so much.
Thank you. But I was told this was going to be a wrestling show. Are we not here to talk about that Omega Okada match?
Unfortunately, I don't know what you're talking about right now.
Damn it. All right. Video games. I can talk about video games.
Usually, if there's video games, wrestling is not far. It's like right around the corner. And
I found that to be true, weirdly, yeah. Which I never realized the connection was that close.
It is. Anime, video games, and wrestling are like a trifecta of things
it's really
that...
incredible.
Yeah. things that dudes are into. But they usually run one's right around the corner for the other. But I'm there for the anime and video games. But when wrestling shows up, I'm going to, you know. Yeah. See, I don't have any animosity towards wrestling. I just didn't get into it when I was 10, so I'm not into it now.
And it's like, weird because I actually did sort of like it when I was 10, and then I just got bored, I guess.
Well, I mean, you do out, like, in spite of the way society seems to go, like, you do outgrow things.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I'm the odd one out here because I got into wrestling totally in adulthood, so...
Really?
Who can even say?
Wait. You got
That's
into
like
wrestling...
people start smoking when they're 35.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's a good analogy.
Yes, it's exactly like that. I started watching wrestling 3 years ago.
Wow. Almost as bad for your health.
That's it.
Almost.
So, okay. Now, that's amazing to me. I think you're the only person I've met that's gotten into wrestling, like, as an adult.
Yeah.
Just briefly, how did that process, like, did someone get you into it? Did you get into it for a reason? Was it just like, hey, this seems cool, I'm going to get into wrestling?
I was always vaguely curious of just sort of the weirdness and spectacle of it all. And at one point, there was a friend in town who happened to be super into wrestling. And I was like, okay, you need to get me into wrestling this week. And it kind of just happened.
Okay. Well, you went to him and said, hey, get me into wrestling.
Pretty much.
You were motivated. You were like, I'm doing this. I'm taking
this
the plunge.
In my life.
I don't know. I like that. I like that because I'll do that too. I'll just decide, you know what? I'm going to find out about this thing and just go for it. That's a little different from having gotten into it when you were 10 years old. So do you watch like WWE or do you watch like Japanese wrestling? Sounds like.
A little of everything. I actually, one of my gigs is as a senior editor for a wrestling site. So I'm actually watching a lot more than I otherwise would right now.
Wait, you're the senior editor for a wrestling site, but you've only been watching it for 3 years?
Don't let this get out.
Sorry, I'll take that out.
Anybody who reads that site.
I'll take that out. I'll take that out of the podcast. And you know what? And here we are, still talking about wrestling several minutes later.
I was not expecting this.
That's the curse of wrestling. If someone brings it up,
the curse of us, we're the tangent.
Yeah, it's true. But if someone
just like bring tangents wherever we go,
but
it's gonna try to keep it under control, though.
I find that's a rule, though. If someone brings up wrestling, you'll have half the room. Half of them will want to talk about wrestling. The other half won't. That half will be like, "Hey, I don't know about wrestling," and everyone will agree to not talk about wrestling and then talk about wrestling for another like half an hour. That's how it goes every time. Let's talk about video games because we have not in a long ass time. I want to go around and tell me the best game that you played in 2016, the best game you played last year. Dustin, let's start with you.
I'm going to have to say Overwatch. It might be like the vanilla answer for this, I feel like. But,
maybe.
yeah, I'm not normally one for competitive shooters, but something about Overwatch just kind of grabbed me in a way that nothing else in that genre ever really has.
So you didn't play, like, Team Fortress or any of that stuff?
Actually, Team Fortress 2 is the only other shooter I've ever put any significant amount of time into, and that probably explains the...
I've solved the mystery.
Yep.
I sleuthed it out. That's cool. So, all right, so Overwatch for you. That's also my answer. Here's a huge spoiler. Dave, what about you?
For me, it was Hitman.
Okay, all right. I've heard a tremendous amount about Hitman. Tell me about Hitman.
I mean, it's this weird game where you go into it. I've played the other Hitman games. I've never thought they had a lot of personality. Mm-mm. But you go into it expecting this game with absolutely no personality. But what you're actually getting is this super weird blank canvas with just a lot of tools to decide on your own personality. So, like, it's not completely like a straightforward murder game, but I feel like a lot of the jokes they attempt in the interstitial dialogue fall pretty flat. But what they do really well is give you a bunch of goofy tools and like a lot of weird costumes that set the tone just a little askew. So you've got like your guns and your with the piano wire and all that stuff. But you also have like proximity exploding rubber ducks and a syringe that gives guys really bad diarrhea. And like now that there's a Christmas episode, you can dress up as Santa when you enter the level and murder people as Santa, or a vampire magician, or like you can hit people on the head with cans of expired spaghetti sauce. So you can kind of create your own, I don't know, like headcanon or something about how this dude who's supposed to be like, he's a clone and he's like the best assassin in the world, but like he dresses up as a runway model and then like walks the runway every time before he gets his kill and stuff like that. So especially playing that with like a streaming audience. But I would think in any group situation, just the way things escalate, because it's not a super hard game, but you have to be really, really patient not to mess up. And there are so many vectors you have to sort of think about that you're going to walk into some place in the wrong costume and be trespassing because you're not a security guard or something like that. And then somebody will see you out of the corner of your eye and they'll be like, hey, you're not supposed to be there. And that's when you panic and hit him in the face with a wrench. But like a model saw you doing it. So now you have to chase down that model and hide his body in like a bathroom. But then a waiter sees you do that. So yeah, it just becomes this like, how many things can I do wrong kind of carnage simulator.
Spiraling hijinks.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's just like a way to be goofy in this thing where like the theoretical goal is to do the silent assassin takedown where you only kill your target and you're never seen and no bodies are found and you always make it look like an accident, which can be fun and is something I really like about stealth games is ghost runs. But you could also do the thing where you're just like, I'm just going to let it play out. Like just whatever ridiculous crap happens, just let it ride. And just like see how this like clockwork machinery just completely breaks down as you, the foreign agent, just sort of start throwing wrenches into the gears. Sometimes literally if the gears are people's jaws.
Yeah, I bought that in the Steam sale over winter and played a little bit of it and realized that, like, oh, I think this is, like, super fun to watch other people screw around with, but, like, I don't know that I want to sit here and do it myself. Because I really enjoyed, like, the Giant Bomb videos where they were dicking around with Hitman. And I've watched you guys stream it some, and it's a lot of fun watching other people be creative. But I enter a fail state so quickly in Hitman that like I feel like this isn't really, I'm not that careful. Like, I'm just not a careful game player, and that game is all about being careful. And like I screwed up the boat, the training mission so many times until I finally gave him the rat poison and drowned him in the toilet, which was incredibly satisfying. But it took like 7 tries and like an hour and a half to get to that point. And I got pretty frustrated with the constant fail state up until that point. But then again, I was also playing it thinking that if you got spotted, that was it. Like, game over. You weren't supposed to keep going. You were supposed to stop and restart and not get spotted.
Oh, that's only the beginning.
That's only the beginning, right? That's only the beginning. At the same time, you got to run and, you know, it's like getting spotted in Metal Gear, which is my least favorite part of Metal Gear games, is getting spotted and having to evade the dudes.
Yeah, hide under a tank or something like that.
Yeah, hide under a tank.
Hitman is finicky, and, like, you kind of have to get lucky with how the situation plays out, because it's a pretty thin line between this, like, comedy of errors and just going to the game over screen every time.
Yeah.
But when you had it perfectly, and, like, we've had runs on the, like, elusive targets where you don't get to restart. You only get one try, where, like, somebody sees me, I knock him out, and as I'm dragging him, like, the next guy sees me, like, they go tell on me. And so that's how you end up with, like, 8 bodies in 4 separate freezer chests in this restaurant basement, and you're like, sort of clap your hands at the end of it, and you're like, well, now I'm ready to start the level. I was just down here for the rat poison. And like a stream audience is a huge boon, at least in my opinion. You know, we have a fairly small stream, but even still, like, part of it is sort of egging them on and, like, seeing how much risky behavior they will tolerate before they just completely break down. It's like, no, don't do that. Like, don't walk around as the vampire.
One other interesting thing I think is worth mentioning with Hitman is that since that game is so much about, like, learning the maps, learning those patterns, learning every gear that makes up each of those locations, I think the episodic release of that, like, really worked well in a way that it kind of hasn't for a lot of other games, because, you know, you're getting a month with each of these, like, really intricate levels that you kind of have to learn inside and out to be effective with them. And I think the episodic release has really made that a lot more of a fun process to go through.
Yeah, they really...
Yeah, totally.
Sorry, go ahead. No, yeah, they've, like, really hit the DLC thing out of the park. It's with the, what do they call it, the limited target? What's it called?
Yeah, elusive targets.
Elusive targets and all that. It's just,
like, they give
you
bonus missions, too, on, like, variants of each map.
And I haven't seen many games really, do that well. And this just seems like it's set a new standard for that.
Yeah, people really, really, really like it, and it feels like that's going to be what Hitman is for the foreseeable future, because, you know, I played the original on, is it PS1 or PS2?
Yeah.
Was the first one was PS2?
PS1.
Jeez, I think I played it on PC.
I'm almost certain. It was also on PC.
Yeah, I played it on PC. Well, rather, I watched my college roommate play it on PC and fail over and over again, and I'm pretty sure the first one, or was it the second one, was one of the first games with Ragdoll on the bodies, and so you get the Vulcan cannon and just watch these ragdoll bodies. That was a long time ago. But then they had, like, Blood Money and Absolution, and those games, like, weren't that good.
Blood Money
was all right.
I feel like it's pretty strong. Absolution is awful.
Yeah, it's
like Absolution had it's so terrible. It's really bad, and it's sort of emblematic of, like, the things that Hitman isn't that people ascribe to the Hitman series.
Yeah,
like, it's just really, like, the tone is awful, and, like,
it's all
Hitman
about
never has perfect tone, but
it's all about shooting those sexy nuns.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that was part of it. That wasn't about the case against it I was building in my brain right now, but that's almost all that needs to be said. Yeah, but the Hitman Absolution was so bad that it wasn't until all this, like, word of mouth about the new one came around that I was like, oh, maybe I should look at this.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I think it's easy to mistake it for they play the tone totally straight, even in the current one. So, or they play the narration really straight. They're like Agent 47. There's no goofiness in sort of the tone or the way it's presented.
Yeah, you still kind of do have to ignore the cutscenes.
Yeah, you do.
The environment.
You do. Those cutscenes are brutal. I was like, oh, this is the same boring.
Yeah, it's very video game cutscene-y. Yeah. And I don't feel like their sort of interstitial guard dialogue is very good. You know, they're sort of like, have you heard of string theory? Like, and it's like, oh, isn't it like funny that these like guards in an attic are talking about multiple universes? And like, I've never thought that stuff is all that funny either. It feels very like video game humor-y to me. But I feel like the non-verbal, like mechanical elements of the game are so good. Like, there's this bit, like when you, I'll always remember like, watching like a giant bomb stream of the game, and he's sneaking up on the number one fashion model in the world to steal his outfit, and the guy's on the phone, and he does the lock on targeting and throws the wrench, and as it's in midair, the dude turns around and just goes, oh no, and just gets walloped with this wrench and down, and then you're dragging his naked body around. So sort of the thematic elements of the game are very strong, but like what the traditional narrative
We need to pause for a second and make clear that everyone knows that fashion model's name is Helmut Krueger.
Right. Sure is.
Some have called him a baby Krueger boy, but I don't know anything about that.
Dave's developed a whole persona.
Yeah, I've got a Hitman mythos.
Okay.
But Helmut Krueger does speak for itself. That's pretty great.
And that's,
it's just
that's
like
actually
the perfect
one of
name
the,
they could have chosen.
That's one of the good sort of writing bits in the game, is that he is acknowledged in other levels, and like at the last level you're in a
and beloved.
Yeah, you're in like a clinic where dude is getting reconstructive surgery to look like Helmut Krueger, and he tries to drag you into a fight because of course as like a genetically molded white man clone you look exactly like the perfect ideal of a fashion model, so he thinks you've already gotten the surgery and taken the rug out from under him, and then you steal his outfit to go pretend to be him to get the doctor's outfit. You know, it's how you do it.
I mean, that's a thing, though. Like, that wouldn't have... Like, all of that felt organic. It didn't feel like they were putting that shit in there specifically to create memes and stuff. It was just like, hey, there's some quirkiness in here that sort of organically fits with the rest of the game that we made, and, like, every sandbox game is funny. If it's not funny, it's boring. So, like Hitman had to be kind of funny as a sandbox in order for it to be entertaining. And all those pieces come together really well. Like, I am never put off by the tonal whiplash in Hitman. It all seems to fit, which is... And it feels organic, too. It doesn't feel like they were, hey, look at all this wacky stuff we put in here. It's like, you know, they're not trying too hard.
They hit the balance just right, I feel.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, they really nail it such that, like, even the things you kind of feel like might be mistakes or bugs end up being just as fun. Like, I was playing, they have these like kind of hard short missions that are variations that escalate in difficulty. So I was playing one where a guy is, you have like a quote unquote stalker that follows you around the level. And anytime you make a noise, like no matter where he is on the map, he like makes a beeline towards you. And you can't kill him or knock him out or you fail the mission. So I've got this guy who's like being this like clingy ex-boyfriend who's like every time like I throw a wrench to distract somebody else, he like scuttles over to check it out in his SWAT team gear. So I was like, what can I do? I can't knock him out. So I stick him with the syringe that makes him throw up. But then I don't know if it was a bug or if this guy was just so dedicated to his craft, like... He was walking around like holding his guts and gurgling, but every time I made a sound, he would still come over. He would just be sort of shambling through the level.
Wow.
So he's like just resisting the urge. Amazing. He's like, oh, I gotta throw up so bad. Amazing. But what was that over there? It might be Agent 47. He never returns my text.
Wait, so is he coming up and delivering a line?
No, it's just like a quiet guy, because it's not like they didn't do voice acting.
But he's moaning.
For
he's just clearly in gastric pain.
It was like he was stuck between both routines.
Exactly. Yeah, he's trapped in between animations. That's fantastic. Yeah, that kind of stuff is great.
And it's not an open world game, but like this is one of the few times that I've gotten that sort of vibe from a game, because I almost never enjoy that about open worlds, like, or I never have those moments. So to have it in this was very satisfying, because I felt like I could kind of tap into what people enjoy often about, like, Grand Theft Auto and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, the tone of Hitman is closest to like Grand Theft Auto 5, where the story is taking itself seriously, but there's a tremendous amount of comedy in there. Unintentional, intentional and not.
Right.
You know, and it's pretty well woven together. That's enough about Hitman, though, unless that's what you were going to say, Grazia.
No, I actually also enjoy just watching it. But if you told me I was going to pick this game like 2 months ago, I would have been like, that's crazy. But, I think my gut just goes with The Last Guardian.
Really? All right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's other games that are probably better, but I just.
What? No.
There's definitely.
Like other games in that trilogy, maybe, but.
I don't know.
So long making it. How could anything be better?
Like the movie Boyhood. It's exactly the same.
Forever. Greatest game ever made.
Took 12 years to make. There you go.
Just the amount of just where they got with that creature that they've made for you to interact with in that game. It was just so expressive and in a way that, you know, I mean, look, I do like the other games. I like Ico and I played the Shadow of the Colossus or I played like half of it. And then I just like couldn't handle killing the Colossi anymore. So I kind of gave up. It was just like, it's too stressful. And I just feel weird and bad and I don't want to do this anymore. But even though the puzzles weren't so great in The Last Guardian, I just found the interactions and like there was just so much surprise that surprised me about how much I cared about that relationship between the main character and the griffin, snake, marmot, cat, dog.
all animals, yeah.
It was, and the way, you know, a lot of it is in the way that they've managed to capture in its movements, its emotions. You know, sometimes it's sort of like skulking like a cat and kind of like uncertain. And then other times it's like pouncing like a weird ferret. And then other times it's like acting like an adorable puppy. And the way that it sort of clings to you and that bond that forms, you know, you don't get that in video games very often. So I think that really stood out, and like I just made so many jokes over the years about how this was, yeah, it's going to tug at your heartstrings, but it's going to be really bad and like never coming out. And we made constant jokes actually about how, while we were playing it, about how Ueda was like, you know, I was going to make this main character a girl, but then I was like, you know, they can't like climb things. And I was like, oh, good thing this is a young boy child, because otherwise he wouldn't be able to jump 15 feet into the air and cling onto the side of a building. That would be very, you know, difficult for a girl, but this boy child is very good at it. But despite all of that, I don't know. It's just, they did a really good job.
Well, that's fascinating to me, because a lot of the reactions to that game seem like they're rooted in, I really love Shadow of the Colossus and was kind of on Ico. And so they were kind of let down by The Last Guardian. Heavier on Ico and kind of on Shadow of the Colossus. And so The Last Guardian seems like it's more your thing. So that's, there you go. Like there, I feel like that sort of solves that.
The mystery. And the puzzles, a lot of the puzzles in this were really, they weren't as complicated as Ico. I mean,
really?
Ico, it's probably Ico.
Whatever.
I go back and forth.
Yeah, me
honestly,
too.
That's what I say. But, yeah, the puzzles weren't as intricate, but in some ways I felt like that let you, and like, oh God, there was a lot of moments of like supreme frustration with like,
yeah,
either I'm telling you to do something and you're not doing it. But some of that was like, you're acting like a big dumb animal. And I am also an animal who can't really communicate with you. And yeah, it's like really frustrating.
How charming, but, like how fun is that though? Cause like it was fun watching you do it. I enjoyed watching you be frustrated with the game.
Yeah,
I do not, like, I sat there going, like, I wanted to throw that controller out the window. I was so angry. So I was going to watch Jacob play it.
Yeah. I mean, it was astonishing that actually, you know, that in some ways brought you closer. I mean, there were things about sort of just the controls that were irritating, like when you're climbing on it in a certain spot and you're like pushing the controller in one direction and it seems to think that you're not doing that and then you're pushing it somewhere else and you're like, what? This is basic, like what's happening? I mean, it probably is not very, it's not basic at all, I'm sure, like from the design side, but that kind of stuff could get frustrating occasionally. But like the actual, like trying to communicate with the creature stuff could drive you insane. But, you know, I never got tired of it somehow.
I mean, like, I couldn't tell if it was broken or if it was supposed to be behaving that way. And it that to me is that's a deal breaker. It's like, I can't tell if this is broken or not. If it's broken, I'll never get past this. But I think it's the thing to do. But if it is the thing to do, it's not going to actually do it for like 10 minutes after all this clandestine whatever I'm doing. Yeah, I don't know, man. It just that game is super cool to watch. So you finished it.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to finish, and did you like the ending?
Yeah, I did. I don't remember.
It was like 12, 15 hours.
Really?
It was surprisingly long.
Yeah, that sounds surprisingly long.
To me, it felt pretty much just right.
Yeah.
The length. I don't know. I never got tired of it. And I felt really compelled to like keep going back to it. I was like, I need to check in with my cat dog marmot. I'm missing it.
I mean, yeah. I'm glad it came out finally.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Like it's
gets you some closure. At least.
Totally.
Well, I mean, people talked about, like, no one would stop talking about that game. Like, you couldn't, like, every E3 for 10 years, where's the last Guardian? Like, they could announce, they announced, like, Final Fantasy VII Remake, Shenmue 3, where's the last Guardian? That's what everyone wants to know. Like, for, like, a decade, it was nothing but that.
The entire Assassin's Creed franchise came out during The Last Guardian's development.
That puts it in perspective.
Oh, jeez.
Really,
wow. The whole thing? Yeah, you're right. And the movie.
SEO's rose and fell.
The movie came out a few weeks later.
I can't take credit for that one. I don't remember who came up with that line, but I can't take credit for it.
It's a good point, though.
I remember something similar for Duke Nukem. They were like, here are all the world events that happened when Duke Nukem Forever was being made.
Oh, jeez. You know,
but
at least this wasn't a Duke Nukem Forever situation.
No, certainly not. I mean, if anything, I feel like they played it way too conservatively. Because mechanically, it is like the first 3 or 4 hours of ICO for 15 hours, which I found a little disappointing, but, you know, whatever. But to Graz's point, like the way they evoke not just pathos, which is the obvious thing to do when you have like a little kid and a cute furry animal, but they really build like a really deep affection for you in a way that I don't think, I don't know, has any other video game done that to me? I'm not certain, but I feel like no. To the point where, like, when action is happening, you're really in it.
Oh, my God. And so upset. Like, every time anyone threw a spear at him, I was just, like, beside myself.
Yeah, that's what... Yeah. That doesn't sound like... Man, I'm upset enough.
it was a little torturous, like, listening to Gross. I was like, you're stressing me out.
it's true. And it was very upsetting. There were certain scenes where I, like, kind of couldn't handle it. And,
like,
and I was, like, flipping out, and then people in the chat were like, calm down and do this thing. And I was like, God, there's nothing calm about what's happening.
The tail is getting stuck.
Yeah. Don't be emotional. But the point is to be emotional. The game designer wants me to be emotional. He wants this reaction.
It just works. Like, it works so well in a way that doesn't feel like the horse from Shadow of the Colossus when it falls off the bridge at the end. And you're like, no, my friend the horse. And
Artex. I think
they did a good job in that game, like in this one, of making it kind of not a mechanic, but a pet that... You know, the horse, it wasn't like a one-to-one mapping of your human controls onto the horse when you were riding the horse. Like, so in this, like, there is a lot of fudge, which has the potential to frustrate. There was only one part where I was sort of, like, blindingly frustrated, where I was like, I've been trying to dive for 10 minutes. I know I have to dive. You keep getting on the shore and shaking out your feathers, and yes, it's majestic. But please, we have places to be today.
But I kind of like that part anyway, because it was just like, I'm not interested in what you're doing. I want to go sun myself.
Yeah.
Man,
and so it kind of like, it was kind of charming. I know exactly which one you're talking about.
But I also like there are parts in that game. Something cool about the game is that you're a little kid and you never really gain combat capabilities.
No, yeah. That was really
good. Whenever there are enemies around, Trico just freaks the F out, like goes nuts, just starts screaming. And like, if there are no enemies in range of her, like just starts jumping up and down, like impatiently.
That's when the marmot
I'm
going to
murder you. Like, don't come in my radius. And like, there are some just sort of sublime moments where you will be separated from Trico and there are a bunch of guys chasing you. And then you figure out how to open that gate. And then you are running back and you see it just like flapping its wings and like screaming in the distance. And you're like, I mean, I sort of wrote about this in the game of the year I do, but it's like, it is as if you are the little kid bringing your big brother back to the playground to like introduce him to the bullies. Or and like, just like all of a sudden these statues who have been like menacing you and picking you up, like,
or
have
it's
all
like your
these
Luff Dragon
very humanistic animations where like they start drawing their sword, but they start sneaking backwards a little. They're like, maybe not. Like,
oh, this is freaking me out.
So there's such joy in that, in those things where like you just sort of have to, for the most part, watch these combat encounters play out and you act in your role as the hype man, where like all you can really do is push guys over and not even that good because it knocks you over too.
Yeah, but that just increases the stakes for me because like they've got spears, so you're trying to run into the ones that have spears to push them over, and then you kind of like flounder, and then another one gets a spear and they stab her anyway, and you're just like, oh god, so upsetting.
That sounds really stressful.
It is.
I'll watch Jacob play through it and sit on the edge of the couch and
look, like peer through your fingers
with like a mug of chamomile tea.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Xanax.
a big joint and a mug of chamomile tea. That's what I'll watch The Last Guardian with. So I want to talk a little bit about Overwatch because I still play that game. Yeah, I still play that game more than any other game that I have. Like,
it's so fun.
I have a stack of games that I should finish, but every time I sit down, I'm gonna play video games. Well, just a few rounds of Overwatch first, and then an hour passes, 2 hours pass, and I'm out of time for video games that day. I love that game. It's kind of perfect. It's kind of exactly what I want at the end of it. Like, it's, I can play it for a long time or a short time. I can play, you know, I decided to like, I main healers and tanks now, so I have four mains, Mercy, Lucio, D.Va, and I just started maining Reinhardt, so I'm learning that character as best I can. And that's so I can be as useful as possible, because a team always needs healers or tanks. Always.
Yep.
You can always use one of those characters. I found that now my Overwatch playtime is largely... well, does this team need a healer or a tank? And then just picking one of those. And in general, that will mean that I'm important to the team makeup, helping out, like doing something the team actually needs, and hopefully helping them win. Because, like, quick play is mostly still just, like, an ocean of Genjis. And McCree's and Hanzo's, like, hey, here's a team with all of the offense characters, one tank and no healers.
Well, I'm glad Overwatch was able to bring like MMO style role selection into the public eye.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate that I, as someone who prefers support roles, it's pretty cool to see a game lean so heavily on it.
Yeah. Well, and reward you for doing it.
Yeah.
And it rewards you, makes you feel good for doing it. Like, it's valuable and it surfaces all that stuff so that the team appreciates it too. You're not just sitting in the back. Like, if you're a decent healer, you'll be in that little roundup at the end and people can vote for you pretty much every time. Like, I'm usually in that. And that's because I play support. It's a good feeling and people really do appreciate it in that community. Now, like, the community, well, it is what it is.
They
have their moments.
Yeah.
Overwatch is better than a lot of similar communities, at the very least.
I tried playing Titanfall 2 and Call of Duty and Battlefield. I played all of them last year, and none of them were anywhere near as fun as Overwatch, and their communities were all fucking horrible compared to Overwatch. Both Call of Duty and Battlefield, especially.
You mentioned the support and tank roles, too. I think one of the more interesting things is, like, even with the offense characters, like, I generally play Tracer in a lot of cases.
Okay,
but,
cool.
Like, it's not all about kills, even when you're on offense. Because, like, with Tracer, what you're trying to do is, like, get in behind enemy lines and like harass and draw off enemies. You're not necessarily going for kills. Yeah. And that's just like a complete inversion of like everything shooters are about.
Yeah. But it'll still tell you, like, here's all the shit you did do good. Like, it rewards you. So, like, a lot of people, like, so I played D.Va for a long time, and D.Va's super fun to play, and they're nerfing her a little bit, ironically, because she's got...
Nerf this.
Yeah, because she's got... people don't use her like a tank. They use her like a combat character. And you notice that if you do very little blocking with D.Va, it surfaces the amount of damage that you blocked with D.Va. Like, you blocked 3,000, and you're like, why is it surfacing that? It's like, oh, because they desperately want people to actually use her as a tank. which is not something people do. So yeah, I don't know. That game is, I'm glad it's such a huge deal, and it's going to go forever, I think.
It's so full of positive reinforcement.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the skins and everything continue to be a delight, although I have to admit I was a little disappointed with the Christmas stuff. It wasn't as good as I was sort of hoping, but maybe I was just upset that they didn't have a Mercy skin. What are you gonna do? But yeah, so that's Overwatch. That like, I hope that it's not like a year from now I'm still mostly just playing that, because that just means like, oh, you got old and now you just want to play this one thing over and over and over again. That would be bad. But
I mean, I feel like people played Team Fortress and Team Fortress 2 like that was like the only game some people played.
Yeah, the issue is I have 100 hours on Overwatch and like 7 on Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah. That one takes a while to spool up.
It does. Why don't we talk a little bit about Final Fantasy 15? I was going to talk about sort of 2016 games in general briefly before we move on to the Nintendo Switch here. But we should talk about Final Fantasy because it's incredibly relevant to this podcast and our audience and everything. And I really appreciated that game, but it is, and this is weird because I really love Zen stuff, but it's a little too Zen for me. You spend most of that game watching them drive around sitting through cuts and running.
Yeah.
And it's,
you have to be 100% down for the idea of a road trip RPG to get anything out of Final Fantasy 15.
Well, so the car was boring, so I started using a chocobo to get everywhere, which was better, but now I have to get off the chocobo in order to pick up, like, elixir, you know.
That chocobo's not doing that for you, nope.
Nope.
Chocobo isn't paid to pick up elixirs.
Yeah, I don't know why you can't just hit X while you're sitting on the fucking thing to pick up.
Just swing off the side.
Just mechanically, don't make me go through the animation. No, like, you're slowing it down so much that...
Yep.
I don't want to complain about it being boring because it's an incredibly well put together game. Like, I'm surprised at how decent that game is. I'm surprised at how good it is. It had no reason to be anywhere near that good.
It's crazy. I loved it, and I don't really know... I can't exactly say why.
Really?
It's a mess. It is such a mess.
So you... Has everyone finished it?
In almost every respect.
Who's finished it?
I have.
Okay. So that means, Dave, you've seen the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mostly watched it.
Okay. I'm only on, like, chapter 6 or 7. I'm, like, halfway through the game. I was going to wait to finish it because they keep talking about fixing the end of the game. Apparently, the end of the game is a fucking mess. And they're going to, like, fix it up. So I think I'm going to wait, but tell me about the rest of this game. Like, how exactly does it fall apart? Dustin, why don't you take that one first?
Okay. Man, Final Fantasy 15, huh? So the open world part of that game, for my money, is the good part of that game. Yeah. Like, you're already in the good stuff. If you don't like it, you're probably not going to like it.
I like that stuff. I don't love it, though.
About halfway through, it kind of switches to, like, an entirely linear, story-driven, like, traditional Final Fantasy.
Really?
But it, throughout the last half of that game, just, even though it's suddenly story-driven, huge parts of that story are just gone. I mean, you talk about plot holes like things in a story that don't make sense. Here, plot holes are just absence of plot.
Really?
They're like huge characters that die off screen and nothing
like,
about
oh yeah, them. That happened.
So sometimes apparently literally huge. Like
yeah.
In one case, a loading screen tells you that in the interim the Empire has killed a god. And it's like
a god that was like happened? Very
I don't like, think that's even mentioned.
You figured you would have encountered.
I don't think she's even mentioned to that point until the cutscene. So it's just like, it's so bizarre. It almost feels like you're playing like vignettes.
Yeah.
By the late point of the game.
You are. Yeah. Right? I mean,
stitched together poorly.
So you're talking about a project that took more than a decade to put together and has been in development hell for almost that entire time. Like, immediately, it seemed like I was playing a series of vertical slices.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a bunch of E3 demos strung together. And then the story was kind of inserted in those title cards, those loading screens, and in that movie that, you know, Kingsglaive or whatever. That's totally what it felt like. The chapters felt like vertical slices.
Has anyone seen the movie?
No.
I have.
Yeah, me neither.
I have.
You have.
I have.
How was it?
It's not good.
Okay. Does it help you understand? Does it help you get the story?
Sort of. It just feels like another, like you said, vignette, though, that was missing from the game.
Man. Yeah, it feels like, what if you had Final Fantasy 13 and you just took out all of the cutscenes and all of the story and then, like, figured, like, did, like, a real bare bones, okay, what's the absolute minimum that we need in order to tell this incredibly overly complicated story? And then it's just a bunch of vertical slices of this game that they sort of had, like, I don't know, 60% of the way finished. At least that's what it feels like.
It's really too bad, because I feel like it does the writing quality kind of dirty. The characterization in that game
is good.
Decent.
Yeah.
It's not Final Fantasy 13, like, as far as writing goes. Like, it is not just a string of proper nouns with these sort of blandiose characters attached that have these motivations that you're just like, what? What are you even talking about? And literally, what are you even talking about? Because, like, there's a different planet in this world and you guys are from it? Like,
what?
So compared to that, like, you know, it has some of its, like, proper noun-itis, but it's pretty down to earth, and the story's pretty straightforward, what exists of it. So you're like, God, I mean, I know it kind of, you probably spent the past 2 years making something that was very much not a game into a game at all. But, like, I wish you guys had another year to let this thing cook.
Yeah.
Zach, how far into it are you?
Chapter 6 or 7.
So you're, like, right before it goes linear.
Okay.
Right before it goes to shit.
All right, well, never mind, because I was going to say it took a while for me to warm up to the characters.
I liked them. I thought the opening scene with Stand By Me playing was perfect. That's exactly what I fucking want. I want a game-length episode of Free. Give me that. Give me bros hanging out, enjoying each other's company. And those characters, they're like, you can tell what they spend all their time on, the fucking walk cycle and, like, how they collide with objects and, like, Noctis's little anime boy hand movements and stuff. He's like, that's what they spend all that time on. That's instant characterization. Like, I got it right away. I knew, like, these are four puppy boys. Like, you know what I mean? They're like little golden retriever dogs. They hang out together and they're for the Fujoshi. And I like that. That's a very, calming, sort of pleasant thing to be around is those kinds of characters. I enjoy watching shows like that and seeing games like that where it is genuinely about camaraderie and friendship between these characters, and they spend a lot of time giving them all little personality tics in order to bring them to life. I feel like I saw a microcosm of that, not the whole thing, but a microcosm of it, and enough of it to give all those characters personality to the point where I cared about them and I wanted to see more of their grab-assery or whatever, you know, like,
yeah,
that was
absolutely the reason to play Final Fantasy 15.
Okay, so I'm already getting out of it what there is to get.
You have gotten out of Final Fantasy 15 what you're going to get.
Oh,
I
shit.
Because, like, the grandiose part of that story, it's not good. Like,
nope.
I in the end, I like Final Fantasy 15 a lot. But in my game of the year thing I wrote up, I called it the game I most love while also occasionally hating. And, like, this is exactly the reason why.
Well, there's something like 7 hours into that game, there's like a title card or a loading screen card that's like, oh, there's a crystal that chooses a hero to protect it, and the crystal chose Noctis. You're like, oh.
Okay.
All right.
There's a little of that in Kingsglaive.
Yeah. Yeah, I figured Kingsglaive must be about that, but it's not.
Yeah.
but it is kind of, right?
Well, that was confusing on a bare plot matter to me. So there's also just a succession of kings that they're all sort of chosen, aren't they? Like,
no,
his father is a...
Whatever.
Whatever.
I know the load screen Zach's talking about. It led me to conclude that Noctis might be some sort of alien or artificial life form.
Really?
I mean, I think the more likely thing is that he is adopted.
Wait, they never explain this?
Was that not... sorry.
Well, it gave me the impression that he wasn't the king's biological son.
But it's never cleared up.
Sense if the crystal's just choosing someone, and then they're kind of going to be... they become the prince, and then they become the next king or whatever.
As the expert here who has watched Kingsglaive, I don't think so. I don't think that's a thing.
Okay. That's actually sort of what I was asking. But normally, made any more sense to you?
The stories, these things are not this up in the air. I was paying attention. It's not like I was like watching it out of the corner of my eye.
I'm not saying it's a good thing I had to watch Kingsglaive to understand any of this.
Yeah.
This is Nomura, right? Is it Nomura?
I mean, for character designs, but the director is, what's his name? He actually did Parasite Eve 3, and it's better than that.
when was there a Parasite Eve 3?
Yeah, that's
it. Came out on PSP.
Thinking.
It was very bad.
Oh, that game.
Play it?
Wasn't that like
it
Valentine? Valentine something? What was that called?
Sorry, what was it?
The Third Birthday.
Third Birthday. That's what it is. Okay. Why did I think Valentine?
So, in his defense for that and also this, my understanding is that he is sort of a video game fixer man that Square keeps bringing in to repair these projects at the last minute that otherwise would not have come out.
This was a Nomura project back when it was Final Fantasy 13 versus 2 or whatever the fuck it was, right? Like, that's when it was a Nomura project, I feel like. I
think so.
Like a long-ass time ago.
I mean, there are definitely plenty of touches of him in this, but I suspect, you know, he's sort of pretty broadly across Square that he probably doesn't get the director's role in everything. He's probably more of a producer.
But, like with a lot of stuff like this, I feel like I would be dramatically more interested in a tell-all book about the making of Final Fantasy XV than I am in actually finishing the game. I want to know what... like, because it feels like the result of just years and years of, like, conflicting story Bibles and, like, well, we don't know if we're including this or that or the other thing. Like, how long is the actual story for Final Fantasy 15 and what percentage of it made it into that game? Mm-hmm. Like, that's... yeah.
That percentage is small, I'll tell you that.
Right. Dustin has some idea here.
But what's there, I guess, like, it still manages to have, like, heart, I guess. I guess that is just in the interactions with the characters again.
Yeah, I mean, it's evocative, and it's a little cheaty, but I don't think it is so in, like, a bad way. I mean, I feel like it's just melodramatic.
It's
and
Final Fantasy exploits.
If you like melodrama, which, like, a lot of Final Fantasy is since the beginning, for real, like, it's kind of like... if there were voice acting in those Cecil and Rosa cutscenes, like, would they be that different?
Nope.
From Final Fantasy 15 is sort of my question. So I do think it has a lot of heart in a way that Final Fantasy 13 never did.
No, absolutely not.
Cold. Lightning Returns, like, that was a great game. But it was completely soulless. So to see them come out with something that is... feels like it has some sort of emotional core is nice. Hopefully in a couple months, it will be like a real video game that you can play from A to B.
I feel like the lightning stuff, like, that's obviously the issue. Like, this may as well, like, I like the open world stuff. It's fine. It feels like Metal Gear Solid 5, where it's like, here's an open world that we got about halfway finished making.
Yeah.
and that half is pretty good. Like, you did a good job. It's beautiful too. Like, the game is gorgeous. But you care about the characters. Like, Noctis has a personality, and his buddies have a have personalities that you care about, and they're likable and fun-loving. And Final Fantasy XIII is full of a bunch of dour boars and assholes. And, like, they pushed Lightning so hard. Here's Lightning figures and Wild Scrolls and all this shit for Lightning. We're going to make three games, and they're all going to be, look, it's Lightning. And you're like, who cares about Lightning?
The director.
It's his waifu. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I actually do sort of like Lightning as a character type. I'm sort of into, like, the, like, Ice Queen, Valkyrie, like, will sneer at you and pulverize you kind of thing.
Yeah,
but
sure.
The game itself just had no part. Like, she felt like this thing that was inserted into this game where it just made no sense to me. Like, it just didn't, it didn't cohere in any way. Like, it just felt cold and boring.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, but it, and Final Fantasy 15 has, like, a lot of influence from 13, but it's obvious that they were like, well, people should like the characters. And I gotta say, that prompto photography thing was genius, and every RPG should have that shit. Every one.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
They can't be the first to do that, to, like, insert screenshots of your gameplay as a, I mean, maybe they are, but it is pretty brilliant.
Well, like, the Wind Waker remake had a selfie cam.
Yeah, but it's, I want a partner who's taking cinematic photos
really nice
of me kicking ass and screwing around with my friends. That's great. That's, like, the best mechanic in that game.
Yeah. It is. It also weaves into the character development. Prompto was like, I care about photography.
And they do some stuff mechanically with it at the end that sort of feels like they were aware of this system's value. It wasn't just, like, a fun thing. I mean, you could kind of tell throughout, like, you go to save your game, which is necessary because that's how you level up, and it's a mandatory step that you sort through the photos that Prompto took that day while you're, like, bedding down for the night, and you have to decide which ones to save. And it's not a hassle. Like, it's kind of fun to go through them and be like, oh, like, look at that goofy-ass thing where it's like, dude, you were taking a picture when the behemoth was summoning a meteor. Really?
Like, could you please have just moved so I didn't have to pick you up 16 times?
Ignis, half of Ignis' body has melded with this boulder. It's like a graphical glitch.
That stuff is great, though.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, it's so fun.
Yeah. I'm not at the point yet where I particularly care for the combat. Like, it's okay. It feels too chaotic to me. Like, it's okay, I guess.
That's kind of the way it is.
Yeah. The game is like this big thing that could have been a giant fucking dumpster fire, and it wasn't, and I'm like, that is the thing that's sticking with me. Oh, it wasn't a giant dumpster fire. Like, it was actually pretty interesting, pretty game with like good characters that I care about. You know, it's a shame about all that other shit. But
this is a really weird thing to say, but I kind of feel the same way about Final Fantasy 15 as I do about Deadly Premonition.
Whoa, really?
I kind of love it, but I'm bewildered that I enjoyed it at all.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a little easier to see the surface quality of Final Fantasy. Yes,
absolutely.
Plus cars.
Final Fantasy 15 is absolutely a much, much better put together game than Deadly Premonition is, but it still kind of has that feeling to it.
That's a controversial opinion.
I kind of buy it as, like, I don't know, as someone who likes a lot of games that feel like they just need a little more sanding. But, like,
yeah,
the problem
totally
being that, like, most mainstream games are completely sanded down.
Yeah.
So
it really feels, yeah,
we've lost most of those games with any sort of quirk to them or any sort of, like, weirdness to their mechanics. So when you get a game that actually does that, and what is Deadly Premonition if not riding in the car with your bro having a conversation?
Your brain bro.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the Metal Gear comparison is as strong as I can really make.
Absolutely, like, yeah. Like, I hadn't thought about that, but it is very similar to, like, there feels like there should be more here in this open world.
Yeah, it's like a 70% finished, giant, ambitious Japanese open world game. Like, about the same level of completion on both of them, and you know there's huge pieces missing, and it's just, at the end, it just completely comes off the rails. Okay, all right, let's talk, before we get to Twitter questions, and, boy, we still have a lot to talk about here, let's get to the Nintendo Switch, We got a lot of questions, people asking us to talk about this because it is a new Nintendo console that comes out in a couple of months. Did anyone pre-order the Nintendo Switch?
Yes.
We did not.
You did not. Okay. Dustin, you did.
Yes, okay. I did.
I decided not to. I almost did, but I decided that I could just play Zelda on my Wii U, and I'll buy a Switch when Mario comes out.
That's kind of my feeling, too.
Yeah. I'm just still mad about the Wii U, so...
What, because you got very little use out of it?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still a little bitter. I'm not pre-ordering that.
The games that are on the Wii U are fucking amazing. Like, Mario Kart 8 is the best Mario Kart. Those HD remixes of the Zelda games are amazing. Super Mario Maker is amazing. Like, Mario 3D World is fucking incredible. Like, but those are, like, the six games on the Wii U. And there's nothing else.
That's kind of the thing with the first year of the Switch, too.
Yes.
Because, like, three of the top Nintendo-published games are also available on your Wii U.
Right, yeah.
They are releasing those games for the Wii U? They're not... Okay. Well, I didn't know that, actually.
They're releasing Breath of the Wild for the Wii U, but probably not Super Mario Odyssey. Okay. Yeah, definitely not Mario Odyssey.
Well, what I'm talking about is the Mario Kart update is coming to Switch, and Splatoon 2, which kind of seems like more of the first game.
Yeah, I mean, Mario Kart 8 looks great. If they update it a little bit, like if they just up-res the graphics just a little bit, it'll look even better. Like, if they start publishing, like if you up-res Wii games, they look amazing. Like Mario Galaxy 2 looks unbelievable if you play it at 1080p. Like, and you up-res the graphics and everything, they'd be really smart to port that stuff. But yeah, the first year looks really weak, like for a lineup.
Well, I think it looks great if you didn't already own a Wii U.
Right.
Yeah.
Is how I would put it.
You were smart and waited.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm going to wait again. At least I'll be able to hold out until Mario comes out. But what I'm curious is, like, is Breath of the Wild going to run like shit on the Wii U and run great on the Switch?
Yeah.
Because that game looks really good.
The reports I've been seeing seem like they're basically the same.
Okay.
I think the only difference is that the Switch version runs at a slightly higher resolution. I think performance is basically the same, but that's really the only difference.
Well, I don't know. I saw the video and was like, that looks fun. Mm. I didn't really have much of a reaction to it beyond that. I don't know. Dave, what'd you think?
I'm pretty tepid on Zelda these days.
Right, like, sure.
I hope it's a good one, but I haven't really enjoyed the last few.
Well, I mean the Switch in general. Like, how are you feeling?
I mean, look, I can't say I won't walk out and buy one the first day it's out like I did a Wii U.
Yeah.
I mean, in all likelihood, like, you know, you like new consoles, I'll probably buy it before there's a price drop. So when it gets bought is kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, that's true.
But this does seem like a pretty... I don't think there's anything in the launch that really gets me excited. As someone who doesn't really like 3D Marios and who hasn't enjoyed Zelda in a while, I guess there's a Fire Emblem on the horizon, so I'm excited about that. Even if it is like Fire Emblem Musou. But I can learn to love it as long as you can make them kiss.
They just announced a proper Fire Emblem.
Oh, cool.
They had that direct, like, 30 minutes before we started and announced a Switch Fire Emblem.
Sure, I'll take that too.
Is it a port or is it an actual new game?
Sounds like a new game. They had no details other than it's coming out in 2018.
Oh, okay. Well, then I got time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm curious to see how the mobile aspect is going to actually work or not.
Yeah, that's the problem, is like, it, in a lot of ways, it sounds like my ideal console. It's what I wanted for a really long time, is just to have that be the same. Like, if there's a Monster Hunter on that, that's great.
Yeah.
But if there's no video games, like...
Well, I mean, there will be.
There will be enough to buy it, like, with the Wii U. Like, you know, I loved my wonderful 101s and Bayonetta, and there were plenty of things that I do not feel salty about the Wii U purchase, even if it does have a thick layer of the dust by the time you buy, like, Tokyo Mirage Sessions, hashtag FE. You're like, oh, when was the last time I turned this thing on? I stopped letting the controller charge because it kept hitting me with an obnoxious ads all the time.
Oh, shit, yeah. The thing turns on and tells me to buy, like, discounted eShop stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is incredibly insulting.
So we had it unplugged for like 6 months, probably.
It's like, I actually bought this thing. Stop harassing me.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, the console itself, I guess I'm just not that excited about it. And only that, like, it's a new console. It's going to play Nintendo games. Like, the gimmick in and of itself, like, I don't think that battery is going to last long enough to make playing... games
2.5 hours? No,
that's not. What am I gonna do with that?
Yeah, I guess I could, for a flight
for 2.5 hours, I guess I could, like, go to a coffee shop and play it there, but then why wouldn't I just play it at my house? Yeah. Like, yeah, that's not quite long enough.
The weird thing though is that it, like, almost has to be the next main big portable game system, like, almost by default. Because, like,
there isn't another one.
It's not like the Vita or the 3DS are going to stick around much longer.
Well, yeah, and the 3DS is, like, disappearing from store shelves. Like, you can't really buy one right now. And that's an old-ass piece of hardware, and I've been waiting for them to get rid of it because I cannot stand the resolution on the 3DS. Like, this is too old. This is too old.
Especially for, like, the XL. Like, as someone who played a lot of Fire Emblem recently, and we were just playing through Phoenix Wright, like... it's showing its age in a lot of ways.
Some of that stuff. I feel like it's like N64 quality. Flops,
like, it's gonna. Like, no shade, Nintendo, but, like, the track record has been bad. There's no reason why they can't put out another 3DS, right? Be like, whoops, JK, here's Pokemon.
Yeah, if they put out another Pokemon machine. Because if this is the portable game system... and they're saying you're going to play Pokemon on this thing that has a 2-hour battery charge. Because the 3 to 6 hours, that's in the first 6 months. And if you use it a lot, by summertime, it's going to be holding about 2 hours on a good charge.
Yeah, that is not for kids. Like, I could see some use cases for me for, like, you know, my subway ride.
Yeah.
Back and forth from work, and I charge it at my desk. But, and even, like, you know, sort of just bumming around the house or whatever, not using the TV. But, like, for any sort of traveling, like, yeah, I mean, I've taken Amtrak trains and, like, plugged a Wii U in. I've done that, and I could see myself doing it with the Switch. But it looks kind of just large enough to be kind of a pain in the ass to do that.
I mean,
it's about the size of an iPad. Yeah.
The nice thing about the DS is that the two screens and it being collapsible means you can just sort of, like, put it in whatever bag you have and not worry about it too much. Whereas, like, I never got as much use out of the Vita because I felt like I had to treat it like kid gloves.
Oh, yeah. You have to treat it like a phone with no protector stuff on it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, I remember that about the Vita and the thumbprints and everything. That got really, that was good.
You just put it in a case. I don't know. I mean, for me, I don't mind the size of the Switch, the way it looks. Like, I don't know, people carry their tablets around. It's not a big deal.
I mean, for me, like, I work from home. I don't have a commute. Like, that's a home console for me.
Right.
I would rather have my 3DS plugged into a TV anyway, like, as terrible as the resolution might be. Like, it's not a thing in my case.
I mean, it was a real disappointment for me when I was just like, wow, I really wish we could just play Phoenix Wright on the TV.
Right. I mean, but that's the thing that's exciting about it, is, like, unifying the system. So, like, you're going to be able, like, everything's coming. If everything just comes out on the Switch, then you can do it, you know, that whichever your preference.
That really is the exciting thing, like, having all of Nintendo's development, like, on a single platform, like, assuming this actually works well enough for them for that to be viable.
Here's what I feel like this is the problem that they're going to run into. They're going to need a new Pokemon game out, and it's not going to be a cartridge that goes in a little thing that has a 6-hour battery life.
Right.
Yeah. It's going to be a big piece of software that you need this tablet with controllers on either side to play. And that's not really what Pokemon's audience seems to want.
Right.
So I don't know. I feel like, obviously, they thought about Pokemon. a tremendous amount. I'm sure they're like, look, we got that shit unlocked. Don't worry. True. You'll see. I'm sure they have it unlocked. But yeah, I don't know, man. We'll see how it goes. I am curious about, like, the power of that thing, like, what it's actually capable of pushing, because, you know, they're selling you, like, a Skyrim port on it, and, well, you know.
I mentioned that thing about the Zelda resolution. It is not 1080. It is 900.
Well, that's most games, right? Isn't that most games at this point? They're running at, like, 900, like, console games?
In a lot of cases, but that's not a game that, like, has roots on something that is, you know, 360 equivalent on the Wii U.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't... Like, I guess it's just to keep the price down, and I understand that, but is that console, like, remotely future-proof? Like, we're getting new Xboxes and PlayStations all upgraded and everything.
Yeah, but I feel like people have been making that same observation since, like, the GameCube and the... And, you know, comparing that to the Xbox and the, or, and then, like, the Wii. Everyone was like, this is, like, last generation's... The equivalent of last generation's hardware. What the hell?
Yeah, but the Wii had a gimmick that totally worked.
Yeah, totally.
And the gimmick is what sold the Wii, not the graphics. Yep. The gimmick didn't sell the Wii U, and therefore the console failed. So now they have another underpowered console with a gimmick. And if the gimmick doesn't work, is it gonna fail? Or is because it's $300, will people buy it and play AAA games on it? Will they buy that and play Assassin's Creed on that?
How?
Because they didn't do that with the Wii U. They didn't do it with
that. That's never been the case. I feel like they're probably not going into it assuming that. What I would be concerned about as a total backseat driver with no inside information is, like, are parents going to give this $300 thing to all the kids who presumably still make up the bulk of the Pokemon audience, though maybe not. Like, maybe they've all moved on to Minecraft and only... like 30 to 35 year old adults play Pokemon. I honestly have no idea.
And demographics.
Well, actually, like a concern.
One of the, if you look at the third party lineup, at least for the first year of the Switch, like you're not seeing like the year old ports that the Wii U had the first at launch, rather.
Mass Effect 3.
Yeah.
Mass Effect 3, Assassin's Creed, whatever else it was. Like, what the Switch has is, like, Minecraft and Skyrim. Like, games that are actually much older, but I feel like are still kind of valuable.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're more valuable for older people who haven't played games in a long time. Like, people our age who haven't played games in a long time. I think that might be kind of where Nintendo is hoping this thing will hit. Like, people who have, you know, fond memories of Super Nintendo N64 and have been, you know, watching Twitch streams and YouTube channels, which is definitely something people who don't play games do, and seeing games like, you know, Skyrim and Minecraft, and, like, maybe they're hoping that, you know, the Switch is going to be the console that, you know, brings those people back.
Huh.
Maybe.
Interesting. And I mean, they may have also, you know, gotten a little bit into mobile gaming. So that, I feel like that probably is a pretty solid.
Yeah, because those are definitely the people who are, you know, playing Pokemon Go and probably even that Mario game.
Well, I'll tell you, Super Mario Odyssey looks really fun. And
he's running around a regular human-sized city. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I've seen some of the ragdoll stuff in that, or just, like, clips, and that does look fantastic. Although he's weirdly tall. It's, like, weird and gangly and Wario tall, almost. Like, weird.
Yeah. I love... Super Mario 3D World was, like, a masterpiece. Like, I can't wait for that for
such
another
a great
one.
Game.
Yeah. It's so good. Those games are, like... Like, when I was a little kid, that's what Mario games looked like in my head.
Yeah.
That shit is good. So I'll buy a Switch for that, even. And if it collects dust and doesn't do anything else, then fine. But I honestly don't think I'm going to use that shit for portable gaming, period. I don't think I will. Yeah. I just don't see it. Maybe I'll be proven totally wrong, but... anyway, okay, we got some Twitter questions here, but before we do that, I want to ask about two games that are coming up in 20, these are like the first two like major releases of the year, and I know everyone here has a strong opinion. So first I want to know, what are your hopes for Resident Evil 7? Dave, why don't you take that?
I mean, my hopes are none.
Okay.
And through that, I hope to be pleasantly surprised.
Okay. What are you expecting?
Well, I I honestly have no idea because I don't feel like that demo that they've released three times now has been instructive at all. Like, there's that demo gives no indication of what that video game might actually be.
Yeah.
Because it kind of looks like, I mean, it's kind of just like a PT Me Too knockoff with the tiniest bit of combat in it, so little that, like, you get the gun after the only monster in the demo disappears from the house. So, like, there's nothing to shoot with it but the environment, which you have to do to solve these, like, weird, dumb PT puzzles, which are, like, shoot the painting in the head and then, like, point the mannequin finger at this corner of the environment. I kind of figure the actual video game will be a much more straightforward version of that. Just sort of like first person spookiness. If anything, it's got kind of like a Condemned aesthetic to
really?
It.
Really? Man.
Like
Criminal Souls?
But, which is fine. Like, Resident Evil 6 was super bad. Like, and a lot of the reason it was super bad is because it was way too big for its britches and, like, wanted to do literally everything. Like, wanted to be an action movie, wanted to be a, like, tense zombie stressful thing.
But it didn't want to be a Resident Evil game.
Yeah.
That's, like, well, the only thing it seemed like it didn't give a shit about.
Yeah. So,
sorry, is this a swearing okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Swear it up. Okay. I've been swearing this whole time.
It's kind of like, I feel like at this point, I had long since made peace with the fact that, like, original Resident Evil games were never coming back. And now I've kind of had to make peace with, like, super fun Resident Evil 4 and Resident Evil 5 co-op, one of my favorite things of all time, are never coming back. And now we're in this kind of third generation of, like, what is Resident Evil now? Probably bad, but maybe it could be good.
I mean, I just feel like it, I don't know, 6 isn't bothering me thinking about 7 because it seemed like such like a 180 handbrake, like, scree.
Yeah.
Like, we're not doing 6 anymore.
It does seem like at least they learned that lesson.
Yeah.
They lost a lot of money on 6, if I remember correctly.
Oh, it was so bad.
Yeah. Well, what was the last Resident Evil game, like, people liked?
Revelations 2 was really good, but sort of flew under the radar because it was, you know, a sequel to a portable
game.
Sideline,
kind of.
That was a very budget, like, a super budget title. It was really good.
I guess it was 4. I guess 4 was the last one everyone liked.
But 4 was the last one that, like, normal human beings liked.
Right.
Yeah. 5 was okay.
No. I love 5. I'm saying, like, that sort of got broad acceptance. Like, 5 like is one of the greatest co-op games of all time. Yeah.
But a lot of people bitch about 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
I find it pretty glorious and quite Resident Evil.
I heard mostly complaints about 5. Like, I did not hear, like, this is great. I heard, like, it's racist and also horrible tank controls.
There is that.
Oh,
and you're a moving turret.
Oh, my God. We were playing it on the stream when my parents were here, and my dad, we played the beginning, and
he's a hippie,
and he was just like, his mouth was literally hanging open. He was like, what are you doing?
You know.
Shooting these people?
Video games.
There was, like, this line that, like, the natives are hostile, and he just started cackling, and he was like, what are you doing?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You can't put this in the world. Like, what are you doing?
So, yeah. Look, Resident Evil 7 looks like it won't be that, but it also looks like it might not have any personality to speak of, or at least that demo certainly did not. And it looks like it looks like they're probably going to chase some sort of found footage vibe, like steady cam, kind of single camera, that sort of thing.
Which is baffling to me that they're putting it out with that little personality in it, because it seems like if your game has any personality, people immediately turn it into a meme and everyone buys it. So,
yeah,
like,
I mean, like, imagine Resident Evil 4 coming out today with the internet existing.
Yeah, it would be, like, huge. It would be fucking huge.
Liners.
Well, I mean, you say that, but, like, it's not like completely personality-free horror games are not huge all over the internet right now.
So, like, just iterate everything. But, like, I mean, in a way, like, they're kind of chasing that. Like, they're going after a sort of Five Nights at Freddy's, but without animatronic dolls aesthetic. But like, those are the sort of spooks that I got the vibe from the demo. Like, that's what they wanted to be doing.
Oh, they're chasing room for. Wait a minute. Are you telling me that Capcom decided with Resident Evil 7 we need to chase the Five Nights at Freddy's demographic?
Yeah.
No, not necessarily, but like,
I'm saying that.
That's literal children. That is literal, like, 7-year olds. If that's what they're targeting.
You know, Capcom is nothing if not mercenary.
Yeah.
It kind of always has been. They always, like,
they're mercs. You might say they're mercs.
In the PS2 era onwards, they've always had their nose on trends, and I feel like Resident Evil is very emblematic of that. Once like people like Shinji Mikami are out of the picture, and Resident Evil stops making trends and starts like being about what trends are going on, like from 5 onwards, so it's like completely unsurprising that you would have this thing where it's like, I'm playing in first person and something walked by the doorway, oh my gosh, like I'm so scared, or like, you know, that sort of, a lot of jump scares, and like, isn't it scary that this pot is full of cockroaches? Like, which is very much like in the sub $20 Steam horror games, Dustin's, like
stuff that they,
you know, Outlast or even stuff that's like much more indie, much more low budget than that.
The stuff and that I they make specifically for YouTubers to play on their streams and yell at.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is room for like a proper AAA version of that concept to be worthwhile.
Sure.
I
want to believe so badly, but like, yeah, it's burned me a lot, and it's, I'll just keep my heart close and I'll be happy if it's good.
But I don't know. I was hopeful after the demo, honestly.
I don't know. It's like, I'm going to play it either way. So I can't say like, oh, this will stink. Like, you know, I'm going guarded because I want to be let down as little as possible. And then if it's super good, I'm super happy and nothing is lost.
I was like that with Star Wars Rogue One. Well, maybe this won't be shitty. If it's not shitty, great. If it is shitty, who cares?
Yeah, exactly. I just feel like that is the best way to anticipate most media, or at least it's my strategy and has been for a long time.
Especially something that is being made chiefly for profit motive. Like, it is not being made because anyone had a grand artistic statement to make with Resident Evil 7. They're making it because they have to fucking make Resident Evil. It needs to be out in Q1 2017. That's why they're making it. So, you know, it's okay if it's... There's no reason to get upset, I guess.
Oh, also, that's a VR game. Remember VR?
Oh, what's that? What is that? What's that? I hear
is that like bit. Dactyl Nightmare?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. Okay, before we get to Twitter, I got to ask about Mass Effect, because it comes out in a few months, and I feel like it's just going to show up on my doorstep, and I'll be like, oh, right, they're making they made another Mass Effect game. Who can I fuck in this one? Like, that'll be the first question I ask myself, and probably the only thing I genuinely care about.
The answer better be everybody.
Yeah, the answer better be every person I come across.
Yeah.
Is anyone excited for Mass Effect Andromeda? Yeah. I'll play it, right?
That last trailer. I saw that last trailer. And I saw all those Mass Effect things happening. I saw space, I saw aliens, and I saw dialogue wheels, and I was like, yeah,
you saw
play another Mass Effect?
It's been a while, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a while. Like, when did Mass Effect 3 come out? Was that 2012?
Yeah.
Yeah, this has been a while.
And I'll tell you, this is like, I am one of the few people on the planet that this will be a big pull for, but I heard somewhere that they were doing multiplayer in the style of Mass Effect 3, and like, my antenna immediately shot up.
That was fun.
It was really good.
I mean,
that multiplayer was great.
I love that like no other.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was fun.
And it only got better.
It was surprisingly good. It
like, sort of
like,
their
what?
Implementation of DLC and bonus content, like adding maps, adding new factions, adding new characters, which had like, I feel like in this time of Overwatch, the sort of character as class model could never be better suited. So, like, there were so many cool things in that
you
multiplayer.
You mean you think more people might pick up?
Yeah,
on it
because
now
like,
that
like there was stuff in that multiplayer that was just nuts by the end of it. Like, the Geth Juggernaut who couldn't take cover and was like 9 feet tall and had a turret that like healed everybody's shields. Like, just like a lot of weird stuff. That like with Overwatch kind of biting MOBA styles and the way character powers are laid out and stuff like that. Like, yeah, man, if
people are ready,
if I can benefit from that wave to get like another realization of that Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, I'm content. Like, that's probably one of my favorite multiplayer games of all time, if not my absolute favorite.
It was fun. It was pretty good. The only thing is, like, is the story in Mass Effect Andromeda going to be like the story in Dragon Age Inquisition, which they said was like,
Jesus.
And I put quotes around story. Yeah. Story on that one. Like, I enjoy Dragon Age Inquisition. The only thing I remember is who I fucked, because of course. But I don't remember anything else about it. And I remember the bull guy. He was a good character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I liked Dragon Age Inquisition also, but then I played The Witcher, and now I don't like Dragon Age Inquisition anymore.
It's the same. I have some appreciation for Dragon Age. Like, I didn't dislike my time with it, but like the thought of going back to another game with writing that's that fucking half-ass, like, I don't know that I want to dedicate 40-60 hours to a half-ass story.
Yeah,
you know,
you also bring up Dragon Age Inquisition, which at the time, or rather in you bringing up Dragon Age Inquisition, it reminds me that at the time they were like, this will be our schematic for games going forward.
Right.
And not.
Yeah, they said.
Like, please, no.
No.
They said it's
emblematic of everything terrible about Western open world games.
Yeah.
Like, pick up 12,000 blood rock so you can craft some crappy sword. If that's only difference is it's plus one damage more than the sword you currently have. And, like, go everywhere to do these dumb quests and then click on the, like, mercenary board or, like, the war map to, like, send your things out every 12 hours so they come back with your 70 gold.
Jeez. I'm just thinking, like, all I can think of is, like, wandering through that desert. Like, all right, I need 53 more quartzite to...
Yeah.
Like, ugh.
So, like, coming back to that, like, I like the, like, sort of mechanical structure of Mass Effect 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Like... For me, it's almost perfect. Like, they have really small, like, discrete levels that are usually story-based.
Yeah.
And, like, there's not a lot of roaming through, like, stuff to get to the next content node. So, like, it didn't bother me that the galaxy in Mass Effect 3 was very small. Like, I felt like it was just the right size for me. And I felt like Dragon Age Inquisition was very much not. And I could barely tolerate it. So if that's how BioWare makes games now, like... I didn't finish Inquisition, and it bodes poorly for Andromeda, if that's the case.
The promotional stuff for Mass Effect Andromeda made a big deal about bringing back the Mako tank. And I thought to myself, I fucking hate the Mako tank. I hate
it. Everybody on the planet does.
Who likes that?
I have absolutely no problems with the Mako tank.
Are you fucking kidding me?
It was the horrible, boring, lifeless planets you drove it over.
But then it was like, hi, I'm going to flip on you for no reason.
I mean, I did like holding the analog stick up as you went up like a vertical incline, like 1 inch at a time. That was pretty fun. You were like, come on, little guy, you can make it. You can make it.
I mean, was it... Okay, so... It's not like the planet probing stuff for Mass Effect 2 was like significantly better, but at least it didn't have the Mako tank. Like, you didn't have to deal with that fucking tank anymore. Yeah. But I still don't want to have to do that. I still don't want to have to do boring resource collection in order to just. And it's literally like in Mass Effect 3, it was like, collect all this stuff or you're going to get a bad ending.
<It's> like, fuck. That's crazy. That's a crazy way to do things. It's like, nope. Go mine some more.
Yeah. God. All right. Now I'm just thinking about those games. It's like making me frustrated. But like The Witcher, when I think about that game, all I think about is a story and how good it was. And like, I don't really think that much about the gameplay in The Witcher. So, you know, I don't know. Whatever. I will definitely play that game. But man, I'm totally expecting a completely half-assed story. Like, and a resource collectathon. Like, I'm pretty sure that's what it's going to be.
It's got dialogue wheels. I'm into it.
Great. Yeah, perfect. That's all I care about. That's all I care about. I want them to take the massive... I don't know why EA isn't smart and compete with Telltale and just use your Mass Effect engine to make Telltale-style games at a higher fidelity with better animation. Just, why not? Right?
I mean, it does make sense.
If they made a 6-episode Mass Effect Telltale game, you totally play that shit. Totally. Yeah. All right. let's get to Twitter questions, of which we have many. All right, Christopher wants to know what our favorite game of last year was, which you already answered, but he wants to know the worst game he played last year, which is kind of tough to come up with off the top of your head. In order, you know, just the worst game that you played last year. Shit, I guess just off the top of my head, No Man's Sky comes to mind.
Yeah.
I was unbelievably disappointed in that game, like everyone else was. But I guess that's kind of an easy answer. People made excuses for it, and they're still making excuses for it, but that was an early access survival game that I didn't know that's what I was buying.
In the end, I think No Man's Sky was okay, and like not great, but okay. I ended up writing a review that ended up being weirdly controversial for kind of saying exactly that, but that's neither here nor there.
Hmm. Well, people were really mad at No Man's Sky for a long time, over like the way gamers act, they you know, blow up over every little thing. This one felt like... No, I get the anger. Like, you know, I don't know whose fault that is. I don't know if it's the studio's fault or Sony's fault or whatever, but, like, it was just genuinely disappointing. Just genuinely a letdown. And as I continued playing that game, the sinking feeling of, like, oh, this is it, isn't it?
This is all the same.
You don't need to leave the first planet system.
Nope. I was so excited too. I was so excited to leave it. And then I was like, oh, this one's actually like more boring than the one I started on.
Yeah. This one has mushrooms. I'll leave and go to the space station, and there's one guy up there. And
I hadn't even sort of absorbed. I like to sort of go into games that I hear like the concept. I'm like, that's exciting. And then I kind of cut myself off the way with films that I want to see. I don't want to know a whole lot about it.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sort of as hype for No Man's Sky. I was kind of just like, oh, and the resource collection is something that I, you know, sort of enjoy in games. But it really was just so samey after a while, and with nothing else to do and nothing to interact with, it's like this sort of very lonely experience. And you keep meeting these random, like, also sort of lonely seeming either AI or other like aliens, and you're just like, oh, you have the exact same quest as that other guy who looks nothing like you and has a completely different sort of like philosophical outlook on the universe, if you can even like graft that onto it. It's just like, ugh, this is all the same. This is all just...
Yeah, you guys have like a template that you
slotting in. Yeah,
will
exactly.
Eventually build a game on top of, maybe, but this isn't really like a game. It's like,
yeah,
look at my programming project. Or whatever.
No Man's Sky would be a really good, weird, interactive installation in like a weird art museum.
The thing is, though, if it were an installation in an art museum, I would be like, this is an early access survival game. Like, it's not weird at all. It's an early access survival game set in space, and you collect basic elements to put together basic ship parts, and you talk to sort of uninteresting-looking aliens, and that's fucking it. That's all you do. That's it. The planets are, you know, this one has mushrooms, this one has trees, this one has rocks. Most of them have rocks. And it's the same, like, four structures on every planet. Like, all this stuff has been hashed out a million times. That game is a gigantic fucking letdown.
It just took me a really long time to get to a planet that had grass. I think that's what's really, like, that was disappointing, because I was like, everything, the grass is pretty. And then finally I found the grass, and I was like, yep, okay, fine. This is it. I'm done.
Yeah, and it looks like the planet from, you know, in Attack of the Clones, that planet that Anakin Skywalker and Padme go to with those big, like, hippo things running through the grass. It looks pretty much like that. Like, no, the planets with grass look like that. Yeah, that's my most, I doubt that's the worst game I played last year, but it comes to mind as my least favorite. Dustin, do you have a worst?
Oh, I actually have a lot of them. For a while, I was running a stream that involved playing a lot of just random indie Steam games. So, I almost have an unfair amount of bad games.
I see.
You know, I don't really want to bag on one person indie teams too much. What I will say, though, and I won't say another word after the title, is Dead or Alive Extreme 3.
Right. Yeah. You wrote a little bit about why this is a disappointing experience in last week's This Week in Games, I believe. Mm-hmm. Why that game was particularly disappointing. Yeah. Well, anyway. Dave, do you have a most disappointing?
I played games pretty cautiously this year, I feel, just sort of scrolling up and down the list I kept of games. So either I left the really bad ones off there, but like sort of for what disappointed me the most or what did fail to live up to the hype, I feel like Oxenfree is a contender.
Oh, geez.
Like just for the to hear so many people that I follow on Twitter or whatever gushed about how well written it was.
Wow.
And like, you know, I'm not necessarily coming down on the point of like, this game was terrible and it should never be played.
Oh.
But like, it was so overwritten.
Damn.
In the worst, like just teen. This is how 35-year-old dudes think teens talk to each other.
It sounds like you're stabbing Zach right now.
Yeah, Oxenfree drove me up the... I returned it immediately. Like, I bought it on Steam, and I got through the first 10 minutes.
Oh, okay, you agree, okay.
I got it on Steam.
Yeah.
I played through 10 minutes and said, what is this Joss Whedon fucking nightmare I am in? And returned it.
So, and, like, that combined with, like, the way characters talked over each other in that game, which like I don't think would be super tolerable in a well-written game, but
the crosstalk,
like it was such a cacophony, like it was impossible to parse anything that was happening.
It looked quite
which at times was like a blessing, because it was like it wasn't like bad writing per se, but
it was bad writing.
It depended on the character, I guess, like how awful I thought they were, like your friend.
No, but even the way that the
so
scenes
terrible.
Sort of unfurled, like the writing was quite
and
bad.
Just like these sort of arguments going nowhere between these like characters that you don't care about.
Yeah, dude.
And like that is like the worst thing to
feel. I do
feel
like a dick
about
a
piece of art.
It's
just like I have no emotional investment in these things. Like, why are they talking so much? Like, I
am
this
right.
Conversation is angry. This conversation is very strange to me, because like I played Oxenfree and enjoyed it, but have like no strong feelings about it one way or the other.
No.
I don't understand how it like inspires that love or that rage either.
I think it's for me, it really is the quality. The writing is just, it grates. It like just grates on you.
I don't know. For me, it just felt like it needed like editing passes, like several.
Yeah.
Like just to sort of like grind down, like, It was so quippy.
Yeah.
Like, and like maybe I just have sort of a sensitive barometer for that or whatever. Like,
I don't even. I can handle quippy twee nonsense, and that was too much for me.
I mean, I certainly, there are things that I can handle it in, so.
Well, like, so
like
how did you
I
feel about
ready for it?
How'd you feel about Life is Strange?
I mean, I liked it a lot. I also feel like Life is Strange is a little overwritten and a little like,
yeah.
You know, middle-aged guy writing teenage girls.
Yeah, the story in Life is Strange, first of all, it's not this cacophony of, like, 15 teenagers quipping as hard as they can, like, 400 miles an hour over each other at the, you know, and they're all like, meh, meh, like, delivering all their dialogue with, like, the Saturday morning cartoon, like, snarky teen voice. Like, Life is Strange had that dialogue problem, but it overcame it with storytelling and character work. And like,
and
it wasn't
like
too much
mechanics.
Yes,
like I feel like there really wasn't anything to do in Oxenfree, which is fine. Like sometimes that's how games are. Like there's nothing really to do but go forward. But it felt like did you guys play the game that you made? Because like there's a ton of points where like almost the entire game is walking around with one other person and talking to them.
Yes,
and you move at a set speed. And there aren't that many puzzles. Usually it's just going from scene to scene. So the amount of, like, it was always either, like, this conversation finished a minute and a half before I got to the next point, or I'm waiting at the load screen because I don't want to cut these kids off.
I guess, like, I don't remember that.
Neither in between.
I remember, like, the actual sort of, like, environmental sort of stuff that they were interacting with, having some interesting element. Oh, sure. And the art, the art is beautiful.
Yeah, it's a good looking game.
And so I feel like there could have been a good game there again if they just like edited the hell out of those I rethought the characters a bit and edited the hell out of the writing.
I also just feel like the way the dialogue works, it's like it makes good on that anxiety that Telltale Games put in you that you never wanted a video game to make good on, where it's like, what if I cut somebody off before I hear every piece of dialogue?
Yeah.
It's like, well, we just took the timer out of the Telltale game, so you'll have no idea when your chance to interject in this conversation disappears. Which, like, I guess I could see how some people might be like, oh, that's like real life, you know? But also, it's hard enough to follow those conversations as is. And you're making me read three, like, fully fleshed out dialogue choices that aren't just, like, mean response, nice response. Like, you're making me read, like, three phrases.
Yeah.
Bubbles, while I'm also trying to concentrate on the dialogue that's being spoken. Yeah. Like, it was just, like, for whatever good was in that game, I just felt like it was completely subsumed by its like, tone or, like, vibe.
Yeah,
yeah, dude. Like, so, like, that reminds me of another, like, critical darling for its writing that made me want to throw myself into the ocean, which was Firewatch. Mm. Like,
yeah,
I fucking hated Firewatch. Like, okay, that's a strong word. I'm a hyperbolic guy. Like, I just, I'm a passionate guy, but, like, I really was upset that the video games press were praising the writing in Firewatch, which was at best a like C- Fox Searchlight indie movie from like 2006. And I was like, do you guys not watch movies? Because this script wouldn't have made it past like it wouldn't have made it past the fucking script boy at like Fox Searchlight. Yeah. Like, it wouldn't make it past that guy. I couldn't believe how lame it was.
Mistaking actual, like, I feel like it was well voice acted, though.
That's it, though.
And yeah, and I feel like people are just, maybe they're starved for that.
Well, I just don't think they
mistook it for good writing, because, well, like, the writing was very bad.
Like, Firewatch came out last year. If anyone who played Firewatch and thought like, oh, the story just really touched me, watch any of the shit that was good last year. Watch Westworld.
Read a book.
Yeah. Like, watch Westworld. That show had a terrible, like, the middle, it wasn't terrible, the middle was, like, shaky, but it had better writing, and better video game writing. Like, it just, like, Firewatch was, like, an example of, like, oh, games press, and I'm not saying this to rag on the games press or whatever, I'm just saying, like, when they tell me, oh, the writing's so good, like, it tells me that person doesn't read a lot and doesn't watch. And that's not, like, a knock on them. It's just, like, maybe they don't watch a lot of indie movies, you know?
It's bewildering, though. It is. It's like, how can, really? This is what you think is fantastic.
Yeah,
Uncharted 4. People were like, this was so moving, and the relationship was like so real.
What?
And, like, I would just like felt like it was so mature. And I was like, dude, this is like fucking trash.
It's almost the same plot from the last game. Like, it's like, oh, here's the third time we're like hashing out this like relationship between Nathan Drake and his wife in almost an identical way. But now we have, like, the made-for-TV movie, his brother comes back from the dead.
Yeah, it's a fucking feature-length episode of Burn Notice. Like, that's what Uncharted 4 is.
Yeah.
And people get really mad when you say that.
It was just, I was like, this is, like, one of those things where you're like, it exists. Like, it's just very bland. Like, you're like, oh, here's the part where you quit.
I don't know. I feel like maybe, like, I do feel like the character of, Helena is at least, I mean, she's at least given some respect, I guess, by the writers. Like,
as compared to the last game, you mean?
What?
As compared to the last game.
Yeah.
Where he was like, sorry, wife, I must get on the airplane now. No adventuring for you.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe this is like boring dude bros, like, it's like, this really touches me, this is I'm being so like thoughtful and talking about my feelings and my relationship in a mature way.
Yeah, I don't know, like, in a way it's like Uncharted is the much more insidious dude bro than something like Gears of War.
Right,
it's like, because it's sort of dressed up in these like presumed trappings of quality where everybody's like, no, Gears of War is super dumb. Where like, I don't know, it's just like,
but at least it's silly.
There's I played through the whole game and I did Uncharted, not get it.
Yeah, I couldn't even believe you got through the whole thing, honestly.
It gave me, I got weird motion sickness from Uncharted 4, which prevented me from continuing to play it. But what I want to do is stream it and put the CBS bug in the corner and see if anyone notices that we're not watching primetime CBS.
Are you kidding? Primetime TV doesn't have the budget for those action scenes.
I mean, okay, you're probably right, but the cutscenes and the close-ups and everything, you can't fucking tell the difference between Uncharted 4. Like, the cutscenes where it's people talking, it is tough to tell the substantive difference between what's happening in Uncharted 4 and what happens in any generic, like, USA Network primetime drama.
The weird thing was, like, I got to the end of that game, and I was like, you know what I really miss? The supernatural stuff everybody hates in all these games.
Yeah, like, I played all the way through 3.
Like, you and I
played. Yeah, but it's like, you know what? You guys needed that crutch.
Yeah.
It's like, the human relationships just aren't that strong. You needed, like, Lawrence of Arabia fire zombies to close out this game.
It's just like, yeah, I don't get how you're going to give yourself lots of pats on the back for being like, look, these characters have an actual conversation about housework and sharing responsibilities that gets brought up more throughout the thing. Like, yeah, well, okay.
The bar is so low for video games.
I guess that's
Yeah, the
fair.
Bar, yeah, and that's fine. And like, I don't want to sit here and sound like I'm like actually upset about any of this shit. Like, it's fun to rant about it, but like, I am waiting for the Witcher 3 was the closest I think it ever got to people telling me this game has great writing, and then it turns out the game actually did have really good writing, like really solid character writing, and I cared about what was happening in that story, and I cared about the relationship between Geralt and his daughter, whatever her name was. Ciri, wasn't that her name? That relationship, I cared a lot about it, and I really, like, that game had moments in it where you were basically being told to respect this woman as an individual who can take care of herself. And you get a good ending if you respect this woman and let her make her own. You're not letting her do anything. You're just respecting her as a person. Right. Like, and there's moments where do this, do that, do this. And the things you have to do in order to get the good ending are like, let her make the decision on her own. Don't butt in and tell her what to do. You know, that's fucking, that's really good. And like, I've never really seen stuff like that in a video game before. And there's DLC apparently that I haven't played through yet that's like super, super good. But I you know, if that's like a unicorn, like once in a lifetime or something, that's fine. But like, that is what I'm talking, like, good video game writing, The Witcher 3. I can't really, like, if you ask me to name another game with super great writing off the top of my head, it might be a little tough for me right now, but that's kind of...
2 was also pretty good.
Yeah, 2 was our
last.
Bad.
The Last of Us, I think, is the one, like, sort of thing.
The Last of Us? Okay.
Yeah, recognized as pretty good writing that I also felt like was...
Really?
Writing was decent.
Shit.
Yeah.
I should play through that. I never finished it. And I don't know what happens in it, so...
I
should play it.
Yeah, I feel like towards the end they give you like sort of the, it's like the moral complexity of a Twilight Zone episode.
It's
but
fine.
Like, you know, it's not it's not what video games usually serve you. It's
a like the kids sounded like kids.
Yeah,
in a way.
Yeah, no, with the DLC. Yeah, those were like two well written kids. Yeah, with their friend.
Slash
girlfriend.
Yeah, right. All right, we spent a long time on that question. Let's no, this totally that's great. If you get me on Firewatch, it's hard to get me.
Yeah, for me just Oxenfree and Firewatch, it's like it is like you said, it is fun to rant about it. It's not so much like I don't like hold this hate in my heart for them.
No.
But those both came out early in the year and it made me think, well, maybe I'll be a little more cautious about like primarily narrative-based games.
Yeah. Well, in other words, I'm not going to let reviews of a narrative-based game, unless they're written by somebody who I know like watches a lot of movies or reads a lot, or both, hopefully, to tell me whether or not that game is worth playing. And again, I'm not saying this was like a super slam on game critics or anything. It's just, well, if that's what you're judging and your primary thing that you consume is video games, your judgment might be a little like different from mine is all. Like, mm-hmm. your expectations might be lower. You know? So I think it's just, like, finding other places that review these things where they do have, like, a sincere... I feel like the guys at Waypoint, you know, Austin Walker and Patrick Klebeck, those guys have at least a stronger appreciation for good writing and can tell me whether or not something actually has good writing. You just have to find the right people, you know, that you want to hear. But, like, you know, listening to some of those Giant Bomb shows where I think it was Jason A-Striker was talking about Oxenfree and saying, this is actually how teenagers really talk. And I was like, I love you, man, but oh my God.
Like, what?
Yeah, dude. I was like, you're great, dude. I love that you're sort of the weeb presence on this show, but like, what?
Yeah, I kind of like Jason too, but yeah, that is no. What?
Yeah, that threw me. That threw me.
He doesn't. I mean, they all occasionally. And Vinny, who's like a married man and has presumably a deep and long-lasting relationship with his spouse, was like Uncharted, man.
Yeah,
so deep.
Yeah. It gave me the feels. Yeah.
A lot of people. I feel like a lot of people in general went on and on about how great Uncharted 4 was. And as I was playing I was just sitting there like, it sure is pretty. All these games are pretty though. So
yeah.
All right. Let's okay. Brainchild 129. It's an important question. How hype are you for Persona 5? Little hype. So hype. Or all of it? All the hype. Anybody?
Pretty high.
Yeah?
Extremely, yeah.
Dustin?
I'll go with the middle option. So hype.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorta hype.
I'm so all hype.
I played 6 hours of Persona 4 and kinda liked it, but then it started getting too complicated. I was like, I don't want to learn all these menus. I'll play the fifth one.
Yeah.
So, all right. So everyone here is going to be playing that game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's get through some of these questions. Chuodori wants to know, what pre-2000s game series would you like to see get a modern day remake? Well, let's say it doesn't have to be a series. Pre-2000 video game. I'm going to say Evo, The Search for Eden.
Oh, sure. That's a great one.
Well, we just got that translation patch not too long ago.
Yeah.
I played those prequel.
Like sort of prequel, right? Or
yeah.
Predecessor. Yeah.
There's a lot of pre-2000. I play a lot of really old video games, and like the Evo kind of sticks out to me as like, wow, this is really ambitious. I'm curious what they would do with this, and like if they made it in, you know, modern times. Does anybody else have one?
All the tooth on my fish.
Yeah. Graciela, do you have one?
I would say Dark Cloud.
Oh shit. Yeah.
That's sort of my perennial answer to anytime anyone's like, what could come out again? Please, Dark Cloud.
Man, just make Dark Cloud 2 again. Just make it again.
I mean to.
Yeah.
Because that was one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah.
And I just want to play more of it. And instead, we just get Professor Layton forever.
Yes. Or White Knight Chronicles.
Of course, it's not really like
pre-2000.
But I just makes me mad at Professor Layton. Bury you in a trash pile. Give me Dark Cloud 2.
Poor Layton.
I know, but
I got to play Dark Cloud 2 again. I played the hell out of that game.
Oh, it's so good.
It's all
good.
PS4.
Yeah.
Is it?
Never been easier.
Yeah, they just put it out.
This year, I think.
Yeah.
Shit. I'll get that.
I love that game.
All right.
It's like $10.
That's going to take me back.
You will be quickly reminded that game is about 30 to 40 hours of fun in like a 120-hour game, but you know.
I don't know.
It's all fun.
I put like, I think I put a total of 60 or 70 hours into Dark Cloud 2. That game was something else. Man, it was good.
The story is very, the characters are like babies that are given like the babiest of motivations. So like it's this weird thing where it sort of doesn't matter. It's just so good otherwise. Yeah.
Dave, do you have a pre-2000s game that you would like to see?
Your mention of Evo made me think maybe like Soul Blazer or ActRaiser or something in that quintet vein.
Yeah.
Or I guess actually on the Soul Blazer tip, maybe Soul Blazer, sort of spiritual successor, Brave Fencer Musashi.
Oh, fuck.
I think there was a 2000s game of that. Look, I just want a video game where the townspeople are trapped in something and I got to break them out of it. And then they live in the town and they give me bread. Actually, what I'm describing is Dark Cloud 2 also.
I know, right?
Oh my God.
I play Soul Blazer.
I'll come back to Dark Cloud 2.
I have to say Bushido Blade.
It would be nice if there were like a fighting game that was not, you know, of the Street Fighter or Marvel model.
You know what? If they put out like a $5 Bushido Blade, that would be so much fun to watch. Because Bushido Blade is a tremendous amount of fun at a party or in a group of friends. It's fun to play while you're kind of fucked up. Like, Bushido Blade is a good time. It's silly as hell. I want them to make like a nut, like a cheap, like you don't make like a $60 Bushido Blade. You make like $10 and there's some, maybe some DLC characters. Square, come on. Bushido Blade.
I mean, that's really from the time when Square was trying different things like Trey Fencer, Michelle Shee.
Yeah.
or Einhander or what have you. But Bushido Blade, I mean, just imagine the sort of like environmental stuff they could have.
Yeah.
They could have your sword get caught in like a bamboo tree or bamboo stalk and then you'd have to fight barehanded maybe.
I mean, imagine how much, like, how cool you could make it where the mechanic is still one hit and you're dead and it's a fighting game, but the environment is...
You get a glancing blow and hobbled.
Yeah. Like, I feel like they could make a really fun new Bushido Blade for, like, a download only, like, $10 kind of a thing. Dustin, what say you?
I'm going to give the saddest answer possible.
Uh-oh.
Metroid.
Okay.
Yeah, like in the sad trombone sense.
But there was just a Metroid game last year. What are you talking about?
Oh, they still exist, huh?
Actually, I think my real answer might be Star Tropics.
Shit.
I kind of just want to see what Nintendo would do with another, like, proper 3D single-player action-adventure game.
Yeah, that would be cool. You got the yo-yo and everything?
Yeah.
There was already Star Tropics 2, right? Yes.
Yes.
That was, like, one of the last NES games.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no Wario's Woods, but it was definitely late.
That Mega Man 6, right. Okay, Rebecca Nordberg wants to know if any of us played Salt and Sanctuary. I did not. Any of you check that out?
I didn't, even though I'm a big Dark Souls fan.
That's weird.
I'm not a big, I can't remember what that guy's studio is called. I don't really like... His games are just like kind of too floaty for me. Mm-hmm. He makes character action games. And character action is a very two-faced genre. Right.
I feel like it was sort of on the list of things to try, but
I wanted to check it out, but I just never really got around to it because I knew that, like, going in, like, I don't really like that guy's aesthetic, and I don't like how his combat usually plays.
Hmm. Yeah, I watched video of it and said that doesn't look like I would enjoy playing it, so I didn't.
It's a thing I wanted to try, but I just never had time to get around to it.
Yeah, I feel like we're in the era of the Dark Souls clones. Like now it feels like there's one every 6 months with varying degrees of success. Although people really seem to like Let It Die.
Yeah.
Let It Die is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's good, but it's cool.
I probably wouldn't recommend it to almost anyone, but it made my Game of the Year top 10.
Like, okay. Well, it's free to play,
it's
right?
It's free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll check it
out. It's
free.
What have you got to lose?
It's not obnoxious with its free-to-play mechanics. Like it kind of feels like playing an arcade game.
All right, this is an important...
to play for free.
This is an important question, and I'm glad we got this one. Says Quatulus wants to know, best-looking virtual food last year? Odin Sphere, Final Fantasy 15, or another game? It's a clear winner, Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah, Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I was going to say Odin Sphere.
Odin Sphere, man.
I got to give it to Vanillaware.
All day. Absolutely. I mean, for me...
Final Fantasy 15 doesn't look bad, mind you.
I mean, Final Fantasy, though.
Those onigiri.
It's almost pornographic. It's almost too much.
Well, funny you should use pornographic, because I feel like the verisimilitude of the food in Final Fantasy 15 takes away from it a little bit. It's almost entering this sort of like uncanny kind of thing. You're like, oh, well, that curry looks... it looks a little too real, but also too fake. Whereas the sort of lovingly, like, rendered Odin Sphere kind of, like, the apples, and then you go into these, like, cafes where the little rabbit people make food for you. It's just, I don't know. Well, all of his shit, he just is, like, pure, like, roiling id. And, like, so his food and sexual stuff is just, it's close and a little bit too much, but for me, the food is, I don't know, it's perfect. It's just so lovingly done.
I mean, look, Dragon's Crown is still the perennial winner. Let's be
real.
Well,
right, because you can actually cook in Dragon's Crown.
Should I get Odin's Sphere? Should I buy that game? The PS4 version? Should I get that?
Yes.
It's a substantial improvement. Over
I never played it, the old one.
I finished it. I never played the original either, but I played Dragon's Crown and sort of loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked Dragon's Crown, but I wanted the screen to be less busy. Is that...
Yes. Well, there you go.
All right, sweet.
Now there's only one of you.
I think I'm going to get that. I think I'm going to get that.
It's so good.
All right.
And yeah, the food is just gorgeous.
But you're wrong. Final Fantasy Fantasy is better. I want the toast in Final Fantasy. The toast looks
it's
good.
So good. Those freaking cup noodles.
Oh, the cup noodles look good. Man. Shit. All right. Steve wants to know, do you think 3D platformer games will experience a new popularity after Mario Odyssey? Well, no.
They have already... have between like thing. Between Grow Home and Yooka-Laylee, I think we kind of already have that resurgence happening.
I don't know if it's a resurgence in that like a few of them are coming out, but like I guess like it's never we're never going to go back to the N64 when you could fart one of those out and sell a million of them, and that's why there were so many of them. Like, that was a popular genre at the time, but it's not going to like come back in the way that things like come back. I mean, the Yooka-Laylee thing is sold specifically to Banjo-Kazooie nostalgics, and like Mario is mainstream, but like I'm not seeing like a search. Like, Grow Home was a neat little indie game, but you know, I don't know if
I think that is as much of a resurgence as we're going to get.
Sure,
certainly.
That's a good way to put it. I was playing a bunch of those N64 fucking Banjo type games, and they are not. They have not aged well. And they weren't very fun to begin with. Like, Mario 64 was one of the best games ever made, and then there's a bunch of shitty games that came out after it.
When I was 10, I think I thought Banjo-Kazooie was better than Mario 64, but I've definitely grown out of that opinion.
It's okay, man.
The things that were good about Banjo were, like, cartoony characters when you're 10, and that's definitely stuff that hasn't aged great.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't think there's anything good about Banjo-Kazooie. I know I'm in a minority that was, you know, 20 when that game came out.
that would definitely sour you.
Yeah, I think so. Well, okay, so my story with Banjo-Kazooie is that I had a college roommate who was obsessed with it and wouldn't ever stop playing it. And Banjo-Kazooie is one of the most annoying sounding games like in the fucking world. And I have those voices like, you know, yeah, all that fucking shit going through my head 24 hours a day in college. And it's like PTSD. Like, I flash back to it every now and then. Grumble Bundle wants to know, any disappointment in Scalebound being canceled?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Define disappointment. Like, I wasn't expecting anything out of that game because they told us almost nothing about it ever. But
there was never any indication that that game was going to be great, but I think it was a cool concept. So, yeah, I guess I'm kind of disappointed.
I mean, I like co-op games, and Kamiya's never made a game that really let me down. So I had more faith in that than I usually do.
Hmm.
But I also was like, I probably thought about Scalebound twice since they announced it, because like I don't remember ever hearing about it after the announcement.
There was definitely some hands-on stuff that people saw that nobody was super hot on it.
Yeah, that's too bad. I mean, I really like Kamiya Games. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So it sucks that they canceled it.
Man, that must be heartbreaking for that guy. Jesus. They got through a significant amount of development on that thing.
Mm-hmm.
That sucks. Any hype for No More Heroes 3? Anybody?
Oh, you mean that wrestling game? No More Heroes 3? Yeah, absolutely.
I did not get into the first two.
I don't think any of Suda's games are good, but I still like them.
All right. This is an important question. Steve wants to know, favorite alt costume, whether it's from a Tails game or just Pink Chun-Li. Anyone have one that just comes to mind?
Mine is from a Tails game. It's Tales of Vesperia. Judith's costume that kind of makes her look like a red mage. Or Estelle's from the play that you get at the, like, Namco Bandai aisle at the end of the game, where she dresses up like the hero.
All right. Graciela, you have one?
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's tough. These on-the-spot ones. The only thing I can think of, like, so I was complaining about the winter Overwatch stuff, but the Yeti skin for Winston and the Nutcracker skin for Zenyatta were both fucking flawless and perfect. I think Overwatch has, like, some of the best, like, cosmetic shit ever.
Yeah, I know.
Really good.
Winter event stoked something to me. I was like, oh, I don't play this game. Maybe I should get it so I can get that D.Va cookie before it goes away.
Yeah. Dustin?
I'm so vulnerable to cosmetic stuff. Oh,
Joe got I don't know what it is. It's like the Valkyrie costume for Mercy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty cute.
Yeah, it looks pretty. It's not as good as the Witch, but it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. The Witch is a good costume. Let's see. Dustin, do you have one?
No. I saw that question yesterday and, like, I still can't think of one.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it too and I was trying to think and I could,
It's like weird off-color Ken, like anything that's not red. So, like,
I like Sakura's, like, gym outfit from Street Fighter, but I was never going to pay for it.
Yeah. I'm trying to, because, like, DLC costumes were, like, a big deal in a lot of games for a long time. And I'm, like, the only ones I can think of are Overwatch. Like, that's it. Let's see here. Oh, you know what was really good? That last Batman game, they put they put a 60s Batman costume in it.
The Adam West thing. Yeah, that was good. All right.
That was pretty good. It made that game a lot more entertaining, other than the boring, grim and gritty Batman thing that it normally was. All right. Let's see. Tasty Sub wants to know, what was a better Final Fantasy this past year? Boy Band or Stack'ems? I assume Stack'ems he's referring to World of Final Fantasy, which is the Pokemon. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Here's what I'll say. World of Final Fantasy might have a better story than Final Fantasy 15.
Really?
It makes sense from beginning to end. I'm not saying it's great, but, like, characters have motivations and yeah.
And you're dealing with amnesiacs, so that's, like, saying a lot.
Yeah.
Is World of Final Fantasy worth
kind of... It's like these characters live in an imaginary town of their own making.
Well, is World of Final Fantasy worth playing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's good.
All right. I feel like it's going to be $20, like, really soon.
It's really cute, and the stacking thing is, like, such a genius idea that I kind of can't believe no one else came up with it. It's just, like, kind of like Pokemon, but you stack them, and then you also are part of the stack. And that, like, compounds your abilities and can change some of them. It's, like, it's brilliant. It's amazing.
And the writing is actually pretty good, if not in the actual story. They have all these little side events where they introduce these, like, kind of inconsequential characters, like, you know, so the Final Fantasy mainstays like Lightning and Yuna or whatever will show up for a while and then be gone, but then they have these sub events that you can go explore at your leisure, and the writing of them can get, like, pretty actually funny at times. Like, there's a decent amount of mirth in them. Like, there's this whole thing, like, there's this, like, subplot that we never finished about this innkeeper you run into along the way, who's, I think, from, like, Final Fantasy II, and she's kind of like the girl from Ranma who likes the money, and she's like, I just want money. And she runs into, like, this evil lich queen who she beats into submission and then makes her work scaring customers along the road into her inn for the night. So there's sort of, like, this off-kilter, like, very child-friendly humor that's not, like, gonna win any awards, but gives you a chuckle or two every once in a while. You can, like, add the Goblin Princess to your party.
It's one of those things where, like, not all of the jokes are great, but there's just so many of them it overwhelms you with just, like, relentless goofiness.
Yeah. Right. So it's got a lot of charm that, like, you don't get from a lot of Square Enix games these days.
Sounds good. I think I'll I think I'll get that when it's inevitably on sale. Eogen asks, which is the best Overwatch pairing and why is it Lucio and Zarya? That's a pretty good pairing. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's Owen, actually. We've learned that.
We've been down this road.
That's why Grot says it. For a very long time. It's the Irish spelling of Owen.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, I mean, we called him that forever. He was like watching our streams. Felt really bad.
Eogen?
Yeah, I was like Eogen, like it's Owen.
Well, anyway, really? what do you think of his?
It's spelled.
What do you think of his Overwatch pairing? It's pretty
good. I think anything with Zarya is fantastic. I think Zarya could really be paired with anybody, and it would be great.
Have you read that "If Zarya Were Your Girlfriend" article?
No,
I have not.
Google it. It is a good time.
All right. you know what? Like, the Overwatch characters are delightful, and when people talk about pairings, it just makes me laugh and smile. So yeah. I don't have like a favorite. It's just all funny and great to me. I really.
Bastion fucks.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
I do remember that.
Let's see here.
Oh, Zarya, she's amazing.
Let's see. We talked about this a little earlier, but Ryan McCarthy wants to know, what are your hopes for Breath of the Wild? I just hope that it's, you know, fun and cool and not like Skyward Sword at all.
Yeah, that's basic hopes. I hope it's good.
Yeah. I just don't want it to, like,
Skyward Sword is a great start.
Skyward Sword was so fucking boring.
Oh, my God.
I got to the ancient cistern and then gave up.
I mean, it was just the absolute worst, like, Zelda pre-dungeons hijinks like that. It seems like it really couldn't be worse than Skyward Sword, because how could they graft more onto that system than like a 3-hour pre-dungeon minecart level?
People really loved it though when
it came out.
I remember a lot of people really loved it when it came out, like games reviewers really loved it.
Skyward Sword would be a great game if it were 10 to 15 hours shorter.
Totally redesigned from the ground up in terms of like dungeons and the overworld, and like it was all bad. Like even the story was kind of like I first of all I don't appreciate any like Hyrule Historia, let's connect all the timelines. It's fine if they're all just distinct islands of self-contained or whatever.
I got into a weird YouTube rabbit hole the other day with the lore videos.
I can only imagine
it's a thing.
And so the story was like whatever. Look, it's the origin of the Master Sword, here's the thing I didn't need to know about, and like here's the dungeon before the dungeon, and they're literally making you go through the same area like 3 times.
Yep.
So it was like all the worst impulses of a Zelda game in one place, stretched on forever. And yeah, I don't know, man. But this game, like the trailers look great. It looks like fun. Like I am ready for a good Zelda game. And I gotta be honest, like, so I bought Twilight Princess, the HD version, and The graphical improvement in that game, like, and the speed with which you can get through it now, really improved that game to my eyes. Like, it's not cool. Like Twilight Princess is still kind of a fucked up bad game, but like that version of it is way better.
Twilight Princess for me is also weird because I enjoyed it more the second time anyway.
Yeah,
I replayed it a couple of years ago, even before the HD remake, and liked it from the expectations of it.
Nothing will ever beat Ocarina of Time, but I think it's just like whichever one you played first, but
except Majora's Mask, right?
The thing is, I never really played Majora's Mask. Let's see here. All right, AngelXO3 wants to know, do you think Nintendo nailed the messaging of the Switch this time around during their recent conference, or have they made slip-ups? I mean, I'm not the person to sit here and judge.
Absolutely not. I really think that presentation was bad.
Really?
They spent half an hour talking about motion controls. The first half of that show was all about the exact same motion controls that nobody wants to come back.
I guess that's sort of true. I mean, I was enjoying the ambient show that was on before. Like, it had a really nice light show, and the music was really good. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to buy a Nintendo.
They should have just done that for 3 hours.
Yeah, that was great, man. It was like my Spotify playlist.
I didn't watch it, but I did see the awkward video of people milking cows.
Yeah, that tech demo stuff. I mean, I don't think 1-2 Switch is the new Wii Sports. Also, why doesn't that thing have a Wii Sports equivalent at launch? Like, why?
I mean, yeah. That is bonkers.
That's because that 1-2 Switch thing, they're selling it to you like you don't look at the screen. You aim remotes at each other for, like, duels and standoffs and stuff, and it's like a party game.
I mean, the five people who are way into Johann Sebastian Joust will be into it.
Oh, yeah,
that's
right.
Not exactly a huge audience.
Yeah, right. I don't know. That stuff seems like cool tech demo. Like, the thing that people are going to use this for is playing regular console games. Like, I don't know. Let's see here. We think we have a few others. Let's see. Fruit Snack Eater wants to know, do you have any hopes for support from Switch from companies like NIS or Atlas long after launch? They stuck with the Vita. If they sell on it, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, NIS, yes, is like the only person still putting things out for the Vita. So, probably, right?
Probably. Let's see. Any moment from a video game, Dollar Bang wants to know, any moment from a video game that you finally remember, but it's likely a game you will never play again? I mean, there's a lot of those.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to play through The Witcher 3 again.
All of the moments from Yakuza 5.
Oh, yeah. Right. Hey, Yakuza 0 is coming out, right?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about getting that.
I'm definitely getting that.
There's a handful of moments in any Yakuza game I could pick, but punching a tiger in the middle of the smaller Golden Palace inside Osaka Palace is like a pretty big highlight from Yakuza 2.
All right, let me tell you about the Project Diva section of Yakuza 5 and how you end up in that game becoming the greatest of all divas, of all pop idols.
I know. We just started playing Tokyo Mirage Sessions, and I was critically disappointed that they couldn't even insert like a basic rhythm mini game. I was like, Yakuza 5 ate your lunch 6 months ago. And also, you fight a bear in that game with your bare hands.
Yes! Yakuza 5 is stupidly long and boring, and I hate a lot of it, but it's so good. Also,
but you get to be a diva.
Yeah.
Apparently.
All right. Proxy wants to know, has any game in the past year truly surprised you in a positive way? I'm going to say yes, and the answer is Doom.
Sure.
5 billion% Doom. Like, it's been talked to death, I guess, but like, I wasn't expecting it to be that fucking good. That game is amazingly good. Like, I couldn't believe how well put together that campaign is. Like, I haven't finished it, but fuck. Dustin, did you play that and finish it?
Yeah. It's good all the way through.
Dave?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, it's like sort of...
I haven't started it yet.
You kind of can't believe that they put something like that together.
But I'm like, looking forward to it based on how hype everyone else is.
I mean, like, I'm glad I played Overwatch so much because it made me a lot better at shooters. And so, like, Doom is easy for me now. Like, I can get through it, no problem.
Doom feels like a Mario game because there's no moment in that game where you don't have a dumb smile on your face and you're just having a blast.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, yeah, it's a little frustrating in parts, but, like, it's, man, so well done. It's, like, the perfect Doom game. Like... Mm-hmm. The ultimate, and the funny thing is, Ultimate Doom already exists. But they made like the perfect, like, oh, this is like the platonic ideal of what a Doom game should be. Really amazing. Super Deform wants to know, Shining Force or Final Fantasy Tactics?
I mean, Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah.
Look, it's
who picks Shining Force?
So is Phantasy Star, frankly, but
Shining Force is the choice of the kid whose parents bought him a Sega Saturn. But not anything else.
Call me when... I mean, I was going to say her name, but it doesn't matter. Melia Duel. She's pretty good. She shows up in the fourth chapter. There's a lot of good characters in that game. There's a lot of tiny, chibi little babies in Final Fantasy Tactics that get murdered. But it's adorable. Because they're all like super deformed.
I'm surprised.
Princesses.
I'm a little surprised there isn't a new one of those.
Well... I feel like they sort of drove that series off a cliff.
Sure, but they...
Once they started adding, like, playable Eeyore clerics.
Yeah, but if they go back to the original and make that game again, you would totally play that. Like, if they went back to the original.
Absolutely.
Like,
and I will play any game that Matsuno makes, and I have.
Sure.
But yeah. I feel like he is what made that really good, because that is the sort of game he makes, and moreover, the story he writes.
Mm.
So I just wonder if Square could make something that would, well, you know, even half live up to it.
Well, I feel like a remake, like, we're not really in the era yet where they're just remaking, like, we get an HD, like, remix or whatever, but, like, so, mm-hmm. like, I just went through this whole thing where, Jacob saw the Katamari Damacy run on Awesome Games Done Quick and was like, hey, I want to play Katamari Damacy. Yeah. And I was like, oh, shit, we have a copy of that in the closet. And you can't, like, that's not available on PS4 for emulation for some stupid-ass reason. Like, fix that. Holy shit.
Right, let me tell you what you need to do. You need to get a Frame Meister, and you need to make sure you have all your original consoles still hooked up.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, anyway, so I had an old, fat 80-gig PS3 with the fucking Emotion Engine in it, sitting in my closet with the yellow light of death. So I took it to get it fixed. We got it. It took like 2 days for them to fix it. It cost like $40. I brought it back, and now we're playing original Katamari on this PS3, which, by the way, that PS3 that could play PS2 games, PS2 games look really good on it.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got that thing repaired.
Precious babies, yeah. And then it died 6 times in a row, and we paid like $100 each time to fix it until we were like, we can't do this anymore.
But that was enough.
Yeah, I figure it'll break again, and that's okay. I'm not like gonna use it heavily or anything. And like, if I want to play PS2 games, there are other ways to do that, but man, it did a good job. Anyway,
it was awesome.
Well, so we get Katamari, and like, there weren't any good Katamari games after the first one. The first one's like a flawless masterpiece, and then everything after that is like, this isn't as good as the first one. I'm just going to play the first one again. Like, that's pretty much how Katamari went. They should just remake the first one. Just remake it with modern graphics, but just the same game. That would be fine. I don't understand why we can't just do that. I feel like people would show up for that. So long as you added a few more levels, maybe made it like just enhanced it a little bit, but you just make the same game. Like, that's all right. You could do that. The original is not available at all in any form other
that's
than
crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that really surprises
based on
me
how
because
popular that
also
game
based
was
on
too.
How much Namco loves money.
Yeah, right. Well,
they
so
made so many clones of that game.
So what's available? Sequels. They did. So what's available is Katamari Forever, which is a not good PS3 game that you can play on PS Now, which is a service that I tried to use, and I would not recommend it. PS Now is a service that you pay like $20 a month, and you get access to this big library of PS3 games that stream off of a server. So you are not playing. It's not like loading it onto your PlayStation, you're right. Playing it off of a server. So in other words, if you like both aliasing and compression artifacts, PS Now is for you, because there's video compression artifacts all over the screen. The reason I got excited about it is because this is the only service that has Castlevania Harmony of Dissonance in it. I don't know if you guys remember that. The multiplayer... Yeah. The multiplayer Castlevania, I really loved that.
Oh, yeah.
It was fun.
Actually kind of weirdly fun.
It was weirdly
fun. It was
totally
fun.
It was fun. And so when this service has that, but it doesn't play quite right because you're playing it streaming. It's not as accurate. The controls aren't as accurate. And there's video artifacts. So on that giant super detailed map of the whole Castlevania level, it looks kind of fucked up. Like, it doesn't look quite right. I want them to like just do a proper port of that, especially to PC. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that would be great.
Because that game was really good, a good time, especially with
more
friends.
Like weird and shouldn't have been good, but like,
yeah,
ended up being so playable. Like, as if you could get like 2 or 3 people, even
yeah who knew what they were doing.
Pretty good.
You had like friends who also like Castlevania. That game is super good. Like, it's super fun.
Yeah.
I don't recommend the PS Now version, sadly. I think the version that I owned was on Xbox 360, so I may need to resurrect a 360 sometime soon and maybe bring that game back. But, like, man, it was good.
Please enjoy the pachinko version.
Let's see here. Zaku Type 00 asks, what changes or additions do you think we'll see in the Switch version of Pokemon Sun and Moon, especially since it has the power of a console? I mean, does anyone know what to expect from the Switch version of a 3DS game at this point?
Not really. There was an emulated version of Sun and Moon. Some footage made the rounds a while ago, and like those games actually look kind of good just with increased resolution. So I don't know how much they're actually going to have to do to it.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Okay, I think that actually just about wraps us up. Went a little longer than I thought, but that's hopefully that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, anytime I do a podcast, I'm like, it's going to be at least 3 hours. It's just how it happens.
That's true. Well, listen, I really enjoyed having the three of you on, and this was a great chat. So thank you so much, all three of you, for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks so absolutely. Much for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Dave Grotz and Dustin for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.